Pat Project family, we have an amazing episode for you today. It's with our homie, the barefoot sprinter, Graham Tuttle. And in this episode, we go over everything feet. Because to be perfectly honest, the foot or the feet are your base. And many individuals are wearing shoes or doing things to their feet that cause their feet to be weak. So we go over what you need to be doing to strengthen your feet in this episode. From your toes, your arches, everything. Because if you have a strong base, you're going to be a better athlete. You're going to be a better lifter. You're going to be more resilient. You're just going to be overall stronger. So this episode is going to be nothing like you've heard on the Power Project before. Along with that, you have seen myself, Mark, and Andrew wearing these shoes. They're the Vivos. We've been wearing these for the past 6 to 7 months. And we finally have a code for you guys to save some money because we talk about the importance of barefoot minimal shoes in this episode. So if you go to vivobarefoot.com and enter the code Power Project at checkout, you can save some dough on your new barefoot shoes. They actually look good, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Unlike more other barefoot shoes, these look stylish.
No, yeah, you don't end up looking like a clown, and they look so good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they look like almost like bowling shoes, but like bow out heck crazy. Yeah. But they're so good that my wife wears them every day. I wear them every day. And within the, like, maybe a span of 4 months, my feet have gotten extremely stronger to the point where I could walk around barefoot, even in a field in UC Davis with these savages. So I highly recommend it.
Absolutely, guys. And just make sure to check them out because they have all types of shoes, from hiking to shoes you can wear in the gym to shoes that you can wear casually. They have a lot of stuff, a lot of options. So Power Project to check out. You save yourself some dough. Hope you guys enjoy the episode.
Put the headphones on so that you weren't
going.
Because
I'm making my mix right now. That's why.
Okay.
Anyway, watching Encima's OCD.
It's all good.
Shakes over here.
Are we rolling now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I was talking about Graham because Graham, for some reason, he said something about being sexy, and he said, like, sexy like Encima. And I look back at Graham, like, motherfucker, you don't think you're sexy? Look at you, Graham. You have boyish charm and looks, right? You got a nice-ass tattoo on your left arm.
A nice smile.
You have an amazing ass.
I was going to say, like, don't forget.
Pretty
don't,
good. Yeah.
Like, can we, and Graham, could you turn around real quick, could we get a zoom in on his peach?
Like, okay, turn, but
there are booties, and then there are booties that are, like, peachy. I got a girl. Great legs, right? Like, dude, you are a great looking dude. I don't know what you're talking about. It's kinky?
Cakey.
It's cakey. Yeah. It's cakey. Yeah.
Pound cake.
Yeah. And.
Calm down.
All your content is based off of being barefoot. So you got an audience right there.
Barefoot and pregnant.
Most of them are normal like us, but then they're the freaks.
Well, you've heard of the idea of intersectionalities. And I think of intersectionalities of how I can market my body. And it's just, you know, some guys like balding men and tattoos and with big butts and nice feet. So, like, hey, you got somebody's cup of tea.
Has anybody ever tried to sponsor your feet? Like, could we do that? Could I get, like, a slingshot tattoo on it or something? He's like, what the fuck?
How much would it cost?
Wait, a tattoo?
I'm thinking that's not a bad idea.
You're off the team face on there?
Well, it'd have to be like, you're off the team.
Yeah, right? Oh, man, then I got to pay for a lot of real estate now.
Just the heel. Or it could be like the bottom of the toe.
Are you amazed at this mixture that Encima's making up? What do you got in there, buddy?
It's MCT, salted caramel electrolytes, or Bubs MCT, salted caramel electrolytes, and Within You vanilla.
Mm. Graham, you were telling me that you eat like testicles and all kinds of crazy stuff. Liver, kidney, heart, spleen, all that stuff, right?
You eat testicles?
Well, I mean, which context are we talking about?
Animal.
cowballs.
Come on, Graham.
This is a side story, but I had a girl that I was really good friends with, and she probably listened to this, so hi. But anyway, so I invited her over.
Should we just put her name out? No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Don't do it.
So she goes, I was, you know, talking like, hey, you should come over. I'll make you dinner. And she goes, well, that depends. Is there testicle and tongue involved? I'm like, it depends on what you want. But it was, I'm the only person you could have like a double entendre with that right. question of like, because she didn't.
But she knew you. Like, she knew that you ate those things.
That's my point. Is like, she wasn't saying like, oh, we're going to like hook up. It was like,
no, she was though. She was though. She knew what she was doing. She was trying to get some of that.
But I was like, I eat other organs too. It could have been like heart and liver. But like, that went testicle and tongue. And I was like, it was perfect. But I just, the sheer joy of that moment of like, I am one of the few people you could have that double entendre with. That's beautiful.
Are you a coffee guy?
No, I don't. I never. I watch my parents have coffee and, you know, they wake up and it's like the death in their eyes, the coffee breath, and it's just like they couldn't have function if they didn't have it. I'm like, ah. So I just, yeah, no, I do on occasion, I'll do like a Kono pre-workout, just like a little like something to get me up in the morning. But like that's rare. Mm. Most days I just try to sleep.
How'd you end up getting into all this? You know, you're the Barefoot Sprinter on Instagram, and you're telling me how you eat, and even just, you know, working out with you in the gym a little bit there and going over some stuff. Seems like you're very spiritual. Like, what kind of, I guess, like, what happened along the way that made you want to investigate a lot of this stuff?
We're doing the bullet shots.
Oh, yeah, let's do the mind bullet shot real quick. My bad.
Give it a shake.
I didn't know if that's a shake.
You already.
I'm going to just there stuff it go. Down my throat.
Mind bullet.
You don't need to shake it. You just go
down the old hatch.
Just down the hatch, man.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that does not taste good.
We forgot to tell him not to drink the whole thing.
That's a nice little sting to it.
Someone moved the basket, though. Yeah. You got to recalibrate.
In your defense, I moved it closer. Oh, banked it.
Jesus.
I didn't call it, though. So.
Dude.
I'm out here and winning, man. Like,
Tim Duncan in the house. Holy shit. That was nice.
Dude, what the fuck was up with that?
He didn't even try.
He didn't even look.
He just, what the fuck? I moved it closer for NCM and it was like worse.
Anyway, so what happened along the way here?
It's a deep-seated insecurity about how unathletic I was, I suppose. But grew up, play a lot of sports at horrible eyesight, like just horrible. I've never met someone with worse eyesight than me. I had like the bottle, you know, the rec specs and the bottle thick glasses. I think of the Christmas story where it's like you shoot your eye out, kid. Like that was me. So grew up, wanted to play sports, loved it all, but Mom was like, oh, you can't play football, get a concussion. Can't play baseball, get a concussion. Can't play basketball, get a concussion. Can't play soccer when you head the ball, get a concussion. And I was like, okay, Mom.
You don't want to play soccer just because of heading the ball?
I stopped playing soccer at age 13 when it got competitive. Like, I grew up with that. Just wear a helmet. Yeah.
Whoa.
She's a sweet woman. But the point is, we grew up playing sports, just loved being outside. Like, I just didn't really do well sitting down. You know, I was always asking too many questions as a kid. I was pretty obnoxious. But so grew up playing and the only sport that I really got into, and this is how bad, I was at a cross country and track, and those are the only sports that don't make cuts on the team. So, I mean, but I was the tent carrier. Like, I was always the alternate on the cross country team. So, like, that I'm the guy that's on the bench of the team that doesn't make cuts. So, but I grew up, and then I kind of, you know, I didn't really know. I just loved to move because the whole idea of sitting in class and sitting in school, it was just not, like, it just didn't jive with me well.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go and I start lifting my senior year of high school and I actually like got stronger. And it was like the first thing I went to the gym. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, going to bodybuilding.com. And it's like the only thing I knew what to do was I think it was Jim Stepani's 6 week to sick arms. And like I did that many, many weeks in a row. So like 52 weeks of sick arms. And it was, you know, amazing. So you want to, people are like, oh, what should I do for cross country training? Don't do 6 weeks to sick arms. It will not make you faster as a cross country runner. But that's a whole different thing. So what is I go and I finally start to lift and realize like I can change my body. And it was this like huge thing and just kind of realizing my identity of like I have things I can learn.
Where'd your body start, by the way, in terms of like weight? Like when you started lifting?
So I would say that senior year I was 6 foot. I graduated high school. So this is really because I didn't know, you know, I'm going, I had like once a week to the gym. The workouts I do, I'd go 3x20 squat, 3x20 lunge, 3x20 RDL, and then 3x20 calves. And that was my workout once a week. I was, my goal is like, I don't want to be able to sit tomorrow. And so I had no idea what I was doing. So I go to college, stop running. I was 165 when I graduate college and I go to college. And then by fall break, I was 205, or by spring break, I was 205. So I put on 40 pounds because I could eat and, you know, love my parents, but they did not feed me enough. So I grew up and I was able to eat, you know, eat enough at Unlimited Dining Hall. So the point is I'm going through college, like no idea what I want to do. And I rode crew, another sport where they don't make cuts, but, I get more and more into lifting and I'm like, well, I enjoy this, but you can't be a personal trainer. Like who does that? Right? Like these are the guys that are very poor and just sitting around doing nothing at the gym on their phone. I'm like, I am supposed to like do something with my life if I go to college, I guess. So, you know, I think I'll do like physical therapy or, cause the way I thought about school is like you do something that sounds good. So it's has a high reputation. It makes money and it's like a high likelihood of consistency. So like, you know, there's always going to be doctors and physical therapists. It sounds good. I'm going to do pre-med. You know, it's like it makes a lot of money and it sounds like, you know, it sounds good. Even if you don't do it, it's like, I'm going to do pre-med. Oh, you must be smart.
Sounds
like,
good to other people.
Exactly.
You need something to talk about, like when people ask you what you're doing.
And so though the things, it was like, well, you know, it seems secure. It's going to make money and it sounds good. So like, that's how I thought. And so I go down the list. I'm like, everything just seems miserable to do. And I tried to do med school and like eventually went all that, did some shadowing as a physical therapist. And I was like, I just hate how retroactive it is. It's like, oh, you're only here because insurance is paying for it. You don't really care about it. You know, it's like, I'm just here so don't find me. It's like, that was never something that really struck me. And I was like, why don't we get more proactive with it? So I kind of I learned a good paradigm for how the body works. And at this time, I'm still lifting. But the problem is, like, all I'm doing is bodybuilding and lifting. Like, you know, I get into powerlifting, a little bit of Olympic lifting, a little bit of CrossFit, you know, the typical strength sports that are online. Because if you want to go and do this stuff all the time, like, what I love doing is playing sports. But what I didn't feel like I could do was play sports. Because So one of the things you don't realize is when you grow up, you don't, neither of you wear glasses, right?
I used to when I was a kid.
What? Did you get LASIK and fix it?
No. My mom had me playing soccer, and 2 years later, my vision was perfect. The doctor said it was just because I was looking and out inside the sun, and my vision changed.
So that's one of those things. If you look at eyes, the actual shape of your cornea is changed by those, like, intraocular muscles. I don't know the right word for that. But you can actually train those, and you can look at the distance. And this idea of – I forget the – it's not myopia. I think that's long farsighted. But there's a word for when you lose eyesight over time. Like, you get weaker eyes. You literally get weaker eyes. And so that going and training and stuff, I actually go walk every day without glasses in the morning and, like, focus my eyes and, like, train them every – it's one of the weird things I do.
Real quick, Ron
Penna. I haven't seen you with glasses.
I got contacts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ron Penna, remember that? Mark's friend and – well, I guess he's our friend too. Ron Penna, he's the former CEO of Quest.
Yep.
Right? He mentioned to us how – he doesn't wear sunglasses anymore. And we were asking him why. He's like, makes your eyes weak. That's what, like, it'll like, he doesn't
need
wear that.
The sunlight. So
your eyes need the sunlight. Mm-hmm. He mentioned some weird study that happened in China for, like, a grade school kids, and certain kids that were able to start getting outside, they started needing their glasses less.
Yeah.
So I have these glasses, but I don't wear them anymore. Sunglasses.
On the other side of that, what they've done research, so obviously you look at kids being on, you know, social media on their phone all the time, and they found that actually, like, there's worse, your eyes get worse. But the thing that made the difference is if you could go and spend the same amount of time on your phone but go outside, and it negated that. So it's like, I think there's a lot to be – and there's also – I've heard this. I don't know how true it is, but – you know, all of your blood, like, every single bit of your blood flows through your body. It's not like it gets pumped through your circulation system. And so your eyes actually have the capacity for the UV light to filter, and it cleans your blood. So there's something to be said for being out in eye, like, with your eyes in the sunlight or in access to sunlight. But there's also, like, the setting your photoreceptor. If you've talked to Andrew Huberman, but, like, the blue yellow hues that your body can see at in the morning and at night. They kind of set your circadian rhythm, and then super
chiasmatic nucleus.
Yes. Letting go of the melatonin and the serotonin production. So there's all kinds of stuff there. But the point is, when you grow up and you have really bad eyesight, what you don't realize is you don't get peripheral vision. So, like, I'm wearing glasses and I can't see out to the side. So I stop learning to depend on that. And that's one of those things from a athletic perspective. Like, if you want to be a team sport, like, I could play 1-on-1 basketball or maybe 3-on-3, but the second thing started to move quick. Like, I'd freeze. I don't know how to move. And so always a lot of insecurity around that. So I the strength sports I would do were all, like, very much, I can control this. I can run. I can, you know, I can lift weights. And so I kind of got into that. But the problem is I had no idea what I was doing. So I was just training like a meathead. No offense to meatheads. They're lovely people here that are both hurt me. But that ended up getting to the point where my body got weaker. I had a really bad ankle sprain that led to a shift in my hips and my anatomy, and that turned into hip problems, shoulder dislocations, knee pain, shin splints, plantar fasciitis, turf toe, you name it. It goes down this line. Like, I mean, I'm 20, 21, 22. I'm, like, way too young to be feeling all these pains. And so at that point, I started to apply the lens of all the study I'd done for physical therapy and medical school. I was like, okay, well, the body's working. But every time I go to a physical therapist and a chiropractor or a doctor, they just say pain pills, orthotics, new shoes, adjustments. And it was like, it just seemed so retroactively symptom treatment as opposed to looking at the real problem. So that kind of got me down this path of looking at the body and saying, well, you know, what if we kind of step back and understand what's happening, how it pieces together? And so then that's kind of been the last few years of, like, looking at what the body's capable of, and it got me into – I've always enjoyed running, but I hated the way running is presented. Does that make sense?
What do you mean by that?
So running, the most of the conversation about running has been co-opted by, like, long distance runners and endurance runners. It's like, oh, when I go run, oh, how far do you go run? It's like, well, you know, like, running is, like, not – is part of it, right? You can go run distances, but for me, running is like, you know, you chase the ball. There's a lot of people who – I hate running, but I'll run 10 miles in soccer. I get something to go do. I'm sprinting and I'm recovering. And I think there's much more of an athletic sign of, like, running is really sprinting. It's really being explosive. Like, there's running, there's walking, and there's sprinting. I don't believe in jogging, but we can have that conversation in a minute. But when I started to take that back, is I've always been a cross-country runner. But what I loved the 4x4. That was the thing that really made me feel alive. It's like being explosive, going out and really doing it. And there is definitely a place for mid and long distance running, and that's good. But most of the conversation about this has been taken over people that go run Ironmans and half marathons and marathons. And it's like, and that's great. But that doesn't always appeal to everybody. And when the only thing you hear about running is people with very thick shoes and that don't really do a lot of strength training and, you know, want to have loss of bone mass in their arms because they want to be light. It's like, you know, I wanted to be athletic. And so this pursuit of like, what does it look like to pull these things together? What would it look like? And so we kind of draw from the past for things like how to eat and how to move, how to live, how to engage with one another. So, you know, that kind of go down. So when I started to redefine what running meant for me personally and what it meant for humans, it was like, okay, this is actually very accessible. And so then I started to change that. So the first thing is like, well, my feet, you know, I was having shin splints and it couldn't bend my toe. Like my, you know, turf toe is like, it's hallucis rigidus. So basically you can't really bend that big toe. It's everything from like lunges and everything that like loaded the
jiu-jitsu foot. Athletes, new jiu-jitsu athletes complain about turf toe all the time.
And that's because they're not getting, they're loading, they don't have enough resiliency in that plantar fascia in the bottom of the connective tissue in the bottom of the foot. And then they're loading it under pressure and they're doing one piece without doing the rest of it, the connective to the body. Those things, like if you've had that, you know how painful it is to extend and bend that foot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the only thing I really knew what to do is like, I wanted to kind of get back into feeling like I could use my body and feel like some level of capacity. So I started running again and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, well, I think you're supposed to run on the front of your feet. So I just did that. And then I got shin splints for months because it's like, you just jump into it. And I was like, well, maybe it's my shoes. So I just changed my shoes right away. And then I gave me plantar fasciitis flared up so bad after that. And so it was this kind of backwards thing. And then I was like, well, maybe my calves are tight. So I started rolling and doing all the calves.
By the way, plantar fasciitis is something that people hear about a lot and people develop a lot. So can you explain to people what plantar fasciitis is?
So you've got, so there's things called fascia, right? So fascia is this connective tissue that wraps around all the muscles, tendons, ligaments, and bones in your body. So mm-hmm. if you've ever had a boneless, skinless chicken breast and you get that very thin layer that peels off of it, that's fascia, right? And anatomy is always one of those things that looks much better on the pretty little drawings online yeah. as opposed to the, like the real, you look at a cadaver, it's like, yeah, that doesn't look very pretty. But fascia is one of those things, when we think about it, we think, okay, we have bones, we've got muscles. And maybe some people think about tendons as a force multiplier. If tendons would attach bones to muscles. And then we got ligaments, which are attached bones to bones at joints. So fascia is something that is, it wraps around. Oh, very good. So that's beautiful. So your plantar fascia is technically a ligament and that attaches your heel bone, that calcaneus, to the balls of your feet. So that like, you know, that's on the balls of your feet. And it wraps up to your toes. So basically it's connective tissue. It's collagen, a little bit of water, a little bit of elastin that's innervated so your brain can feel it. So there's really deep stretches. So if you take your foot and you stretch out the bottom of your foot, so you put your toe on the ground, you stretch into that, or you take your hand overhead and really lean over to the side, like there's deep kind of like, oh, that feels good stretches. Or you do like a spinal twist. Those are getting into those deep fascial layers. Now, in order to make actual change to that, you have to actively load it under pressure. Meaning if I just – your body's really smart. So our body is much smarter than our mind. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to go work out. The body's like, I don't think you are. Like, you don't need to do that. But if – you know, it's like if you're struggling to get up and work out, you kind of sometimes have to set the stakes high. Like, I'm going to go run. It's like, no, you're not. I'm going to run away from this bear. Yeah, you are. It's like – or, you know, you set out like, you know, I'm going to spend $10,000. I have to pay you $10,000 if I don't go run every day for a year. It's like, you're going to do that. You know, at some point you have to set the stakes high if you want to – some people need that external motivation. That being said, your body works really well. And if you don't load that fascia, if you don't give yourself a reason to do that and then a connected reason, like, okay, we're doing this because we have to support this, the body will not send the message to lengthen and put this. And so you have to get blood flow there. So plantar fasciitis is simply an irritation of the fascia that goes under the foot. More often than not, this is just because we're not moving our feet enough. So if you took your hand and made a, like a, I don't know, it's the opposite of a fist, like a, you know, like
a slap hand.
A slap hand and just held it there rigidly for a long time. We kind of have an understanding that my hand would get stiff in that position. And I'm talking a long time, like you put it in a cast and you hold it for months or years. And it's like we lose that capacity. But then it's like, okay, what does it look like to move? And so the way back, we could talk about the way to fix that. But simply, if you haven't plantar fasciitis, it's a signal. It is pain from your body, which is information telling you that, hey, we're missing some poor piece of feedback here. We're missing some capacity for the body to move. And we need to develop some communication back with this part of the body, right? So that goes, I'm getting back into running. I'm trying to, let's say, restore some of this stuff. I try to change the running form without doing the support work. I try to change the shoes without doing the strength work. I try to just roll and do the mobility because my calves are tight. And that was just, you know, it was short-sighted because, again, you can press in and give your body a very simple level of, you know, I'm pressing into this thing and it hurts, which is feedback, but what are you doing about it? It's like, okay, I'm scratching a bug bite. That's good short term, but it's not going to make a, there's not a real reason to change. So you do that. And then I kind of eventually worked out and looked at my feet. I'm like, oh, wait, I had this bad ankle injury a few years ago. And, you know, in hindsight, it's a revisionist history, kind of post hoc understand what happened. I went to physical therapy and they never even took off my shoes. And I just did like the calf raises and some ankle circles and stuff. And it was like, hmm. And then I look, I'm like, well, my toes don't move and my left foot like turns out and my arches collapse, but that's not on my right foot. And like, huh. And then I'm like, well, that makes I stand weird. And I had, I'll never forget that I had someone take a video of me walking. I'm like, that doesn't look very good. And he's like kind of wonky going left and right. I'm like, ugh. Okay. So, and I was like, maybe there's some stuff to do. And so then over the next few years, I kind of walked in this process and did all the research, looking at like different options and like, what does it mean to have your feet back and to move? And the thing about like, you know, we don't think about feet much. It's like an emotional reaction where some people love feet and some people hate feet. It's
some
very clear.
Some people really love feet.
Especially when you say it with that silky voice.
Yeah.
I'll do an OnlyFans if you do the voiceover.
I'm totally down.
See that big toe?
See that big toe?
That cleavage right there? You can get right in there. I see you.
Stick your finger right there.
Maybe something else?
Yeah.
So, wrap that pinky. So you keep going. Like, all right.
How far can we take this? I'm sorry. Let's get the podcast going. Let's go.
So that's the point of this is like you start to look at this and you want to restore your feet. And so, you know, when you look at this, it's building back up. So I did the research and was like, okay, maybe I can move the feet. And then I started to notice that like, oh, actually like I literally created a functional leg length discrepancy, meaning like one foot, the foundation on one side had just slumped over. So my hips sank over. My back was uneven. That caused this chronic back pain. And it eventually led to uneven upper body posture, which led to shoulder dislocations. And it's like, oh, okay. So maybe there's something here. And so as I started to restore that, and it's frustrating because like, how do I move my toes? And it's like, you're looking at it. It's like every muscle in your body is firing except for the toes. And it's like, you know, as Mark said, it's like Uma Thurman, you're staring at your toes trying to get that big toe to wiggle. And so you build that back up and you start to restore that. And then what you realize is it's a snowballing process because for so many people, it's really frustrating, right? Because it's like, they just get told, oh, you've got flat feet. Oh, you've got bad feet. And it's just like, it's just they identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about this from a perspective, well, there's two things. One is people overemphasize the aesthetic of the arch, right? You could look at there's like a low volume, a high volume, and then there's technically an average volume, which would be like a quote unquote healthy arch. But some people have with long feet just have a lower volume. So that like the space, if you look at your foot from the side, like how much volume is literally under the arch. A high volume would be a higher arch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can have low volume people or high volume people, high arches. That's basically determined by the length of the foot. You can have long feet with a lower volume and shorter feet with higher volume. And if you have function and capacity over your feet, you're fine. We don't necessarily need to judge by the aesthetic of the foot. So, but the point is that no one is born with arches, right? All little kids have mushball feet. And so they develop over time. The problem is if we start wearing shoes and we kind of inhibit this, we treat our feet like nowhere else in the body. Basically, we just put them in shoes and then limit their capacity. And then it's little by little, we lose that function over time. And then what ends up happening is we identify with this thing, our feet start to hurt because surprise, when we don't use them, they don't function well. And then they start to hurt. And then we get told, oh, you need an orthotic. You need a fancy shoe. You have flat feet. You have turf toe, whatever. Just don't do this. And it's a lot of this fear of and it makes sense, right? If you're talking to a medical professional, which is different from a health professional, they don't have an incentive. Their risk reward, if they get you back to doing something like, let's say, above pain, that's nice. But their risk is a lot lower if they don't, right? So their only incentive is just to like minimize. So they'll just say, we're going to cut out all this bottom risky stuff. Instead of saying, what can we do to get you back to positive, right? So they're always thinking, what's the lowest risk thing I can get you to do, which is almost always, and the schools are funded by medical product companies, and it's no fault of their own if they believe in the product. But when the first line of defense is put you in orthotic and there's no line of egress, there's never a plan to get out of that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I get people that walk in and they come see me and like I take your shoes off and I pick up the shoes and then you know, look at them, like, oh, you got orthotic. And like, oh, yeah, one of the doctor told me to put that in. I'm like, how long ago? Well, 5 years. Did they ever tell you to take it out? Nope.
I'm going to cut you off just for a second. When you kind of hear people, you know, maybe you talk to somebody on the phone or via some text and then you get to see them in person, can you almost already tell what their feet are going to look like before they take their shoe off?
Yeah.
At this point, like, can you kind of almost see it?
And yes, and you can too. So this is one of those things where you look at like how we are aesthetically drawn to people. So there's symmetry, right? If you look at someone's eyes are symmetrical, that means generally that their shoulders and their hips are symmetrical. They're evenly developed on both sides. That there's, you know, people with a smile, everything goes into that. Like, and then you look at the way we walk. If you look at people, there's a reason there's duck-footed people, there's pigeon-toed people. There's things that look good. That was called as the eye test. If you look at someone that's running and it looks good, it's probably good. Mm. I was like, what's the simplest metric? It's like, we all have an attune. That's why we love watching. The first Olympic competitions were running. For the first 50 years, all they did was running. It was, they had the stadion, which was like 260 to 200 meters. Then they had the double stage, like the dialone. I forget the exact Greek word for it. There was like the 400, then the 800 meter. Then they did the 5K, and then they did the rucking. That was what it was. The marathon didn't even happen until 1896. When you think about this, like we all we enjoy watching running. It's the first recorded competition for humans were running.
Yeah.
And this is like 2,000 years before.
When you're a kid, you race your friend. That's like your favorite thing to do when you're when you're a little kid.
Yeah,
right?
I'll just run around.
Yeah. Like and, I'm going to race you or try to tag you or whatever, right?
And we should really think it's really weird that as we get older, we stop doing that, especially if we get into a single athletic sport that doesn't have anything to do with
running. We don't do it at all.
Yeah.
We don't even think about doing it.
We don't.
Yeah. And think of how many parent coaches are on the side. Oh, he's looking fast. Like, here's the thing. You don't think you watch running form? Anybody that watches sports can say that guy looks athletic.
Yeah.
We don't think about it. Like, that person's attractive. You know, you're not thinking about those wide hips and large-breasted women are, like, fertile and look healthy. Like, that's what it is. You know?
Keep going.
what else?
You're not looking at Mark's big toe and thinking, that guy could lift some weight. You know, it's like, you look at, like, broad, so women look at the shoulder-to-hip weight ratio. It's like, there's different sizes of stuff, but it's like, there's symmetry. We have this, like, this intuitive thing. It's like, we understand what it looks like. So, you can look at someone, they walk in. So if I see someone and you can look at the direction where their ankles, if their toes point out, if their arches collapse in, if their knees are down, if their hips are in, they're slumped over. Like there's a few tells you can see. But a lot of it, like do they sweep or do they turn their feet out and sweep when they walk? Meaning they step, do they pick their feet, they push off the toe and kind of stay within this line, or do they kind of shuffle out to the side? You can watch this stuff and you intuitively know if you put this, but the hard thing is most people can't necessarily do that in isolation. They could say, that looks off. But if you compared that to like Nassima walking, this beautiful, gorgeous man, and then you look at someone else, I'm like, okay, that, you know, I see that one, but we don't always know exactly what it is. And so you can start to pick that apart. But the point of all this is like, I just kept going back to the question of like, how does this connect? This has got to, it's so fundamental for humans, like walking and running. It's like for 4.5 million years ago, our ancestors started standing on 2 feet. That begins a change where we shift from basically having four paws on the ground to having two, and then we start to develop the heel. So the bones of the foot, the calcaneus.
I'm going
to
cover Jesus' ears while you talk about this theory of ears.
I'm sorry. In day two of creation, the Lord said, let there be heel bones.
We need to get little earmuffs for Jesus, you know?
That would be so cute.
I'm sorry. That would be cute.
5,782 years
there
ago.
There you go.
This is where you get too far. My parents, when we grew up, there's a Ken Hubbard videos of the science where like you sit there, like you go through the Bible of science. Like legitimately, I believe like there is still a part of me that I'm like, oh, do they really know the world's only? Like, partly it's scarring, but it's one of those. I went home and I was talking to my parents. I'm like, they still have the videos. I'm like, Mom, those might not be accurate.
I have a cool question. Do not forget what you're about to talk about, but how do your parents feel that when you've opened up your ideas to different things? Because
they're like, our son has a foot fetish.
My mom always said this. I'm not as scared. The three things she said is, you know, always wear a helmet. I don't care if she says she's on birth control, wear a condom.
Yes!
And if you're gay, we'll still love you. I'm like, all right, thanks, Mom. But like, and this is one of those things where like, that's she would great. Tell me all the time, like over and over and over again, like, I got it, Mom. But it's like, you know, she was very supportive. So,
hey, Mama knew about that birth control thing. Good for her.
She goes, I don't get what she says. And I'm like, Mom, this is such a negative way to look at women. I'm like 13. And then now we all women are liars. Like, oh, gosh. So, but you know, like I've kind of introduced a, like for me just to rip the bandaid off, like mushrooms have been just a integral part. Mushrooms, therapy, coaching, journaling, like meditation has been an integral part of like seeing the world differently, because you get so used to just going through daily life of like, oh, my feet hurt, I've got bad feet. Like the thing is, we go through life and we are externally validated. It's just how we function as kids, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody is, because we learn, hey, it's not safe to go across that road. Hey, it's not, you know, you do this, you're rewarded when you're nice, when you're not rewarded when you punch somebody else, like be a good brother, don't kick your sister in the head. Like, and you learn this stuff, you get external validation. But the problem is like, at a certain point, that only serves you so well. And you get stuck in the cycle of what it means to be you, so to speak. And so, you know, sometimes like you can get to this point with strenuous physical practice, meditation. And mushrooms are kind of like taking the ferry to the island, because once you know you're there, like people say, oh, you can meditate and get there. It's like, well, how do you know you're there? It's like, I've been there and I came back. Now I can meditate and get to these places and do this. But the point is, it allows you to kind of shake things up and see things from a different perspective. And that could too, if you're in pain for a long period of time, I'm not telling you to go take mushrooms because I'm just a personal trainer. What do I know? But like, if you're in pain for so long, we identify with that pain. If I have a bad back, I'm not looking at anybody, but if I have a, if I have a back that hurts, if my knee hurts.
You guys all right? Need more water?
There it goes. This idea of chronic, right? So there's acute pain and chronic. When things become chronic, it's part of an identity for us. And we get limited by what we find significance, by what we can't do, as opposed to who we could be. And so that's so much of this pain thing that we get stuck in as people.
Straight up, I was like that after I had my knee surgery. I was like, oh, my knees just hurt. My knees just hurt. So
yeah,
you're totally right.
And it's very hard to shake because it is not a quote-unquote bad thing. It's just a protection mechanism that our brain puts together to try and keep us safe. Yet, it doesn't always serve us, right? It's like having crutches. After you get your knee surgery, probably on a little scooter or crutches for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we get that, right? But if I saw you 5 years later, you're installing crutches, I'd be like, oh, did you have another one? Oh, no, I just, you know, I want to play it safe. You know, it's like, that's kind of what we do, but we're doing it emotionally and psychologically all the time. And so,
Andrew, give him a yeah, but. Throw a yeah, but his way.
But. Literally everything I do, every waking moment, I'm in pain. So how do I say it's like, oh, it's psychological or whatever it may be?
So this is the thing. How do you quantify pain?
Well, it's the shit that's preventing me from doing literally anything. You guys saw me struggling just walking backwards today.
That's your subjective experience. I'm just saying, how do you quantify? How could you measure pain?
I don't know. I have no idea.
So, and I'm not saying pain, because there are people that will say it's a psychosomatic thing. It doesn't really matter. It's not that important. Like, no. Like, pain exists, yet there is no blood marker. There is no measure to quantify pain. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's an entirely subjective thing. And this is the thing. The most painful thing you've ever been is the most painful thing you've ever been in. But sometimes we get so used to, like, you have a belief that everything you're going to do is in pain. And that's a belief you have. That's what yeah, but is when you butt up against, like, my perspective and worldview butts up against your perspective and worldview. And again, like, in order, like, I'm not saying, the hard part is having these conversations without being patronizing and saying, oh, you know, it doesn't matter, your pain's not real. It's like, your pain really is real. And you can sit there and your body is telling you something. But it's not always – sometimes the body is telling us a message. It's kind of like saying, hey, the kitchen's on fire. Hey, the kitchen's on fire. And then you keep bringing it up. You want a bagel? You want to go for a walk? It's like, no, the kitchen's on fire. And it's like, sometimes with the body, there are these physical things that are a psychological expression of – a physiological expression of a psychological thing that can go as an identity and something that is just a learned behavior, because it's safer for you to think, I have a bad back, I can't do this, everything hurts, than it is for you to think about what that doesn't. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying sometimes – if we create a space within ourselves to say, all right, I have this idea, I can always go back. My back will still hurt if I want to go back to it. That's always there. But what if my back didn't hurt, and what if it's part of me accepting an opportunity that's there? Which is an opportunity for things like mushrooms or doing different parts of self-work, so to speak. And I know that that's hard, because there's a lot of people that are giving up control and doing that stuff. And I'm not saying everyone needs to go do mushrooms, because people get very like passionate about that. But I'm just saying there are things that – so for example, when you first held your son – did your back hurt that moment?
I don't remember.
That's my point. You weren't thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes having something that connects us to a bigger thing can create a just even a little bit of gap to say, oh, and it gives you hope. Mm-hmm. And that hope, like, you can see love, and that love allows you to see things as they are. And when you get so, like, I think for some people, you know, like, they did the study, the Johns Hopkins study, the MAP study, and they, you know, they look at said people that did it were ranked their psychedelic experiences one of like the top five most meaningful experiences of their life, up there with a
which shows you how boring life is. these mushrooms, this fucking fungus that's growing in the earth is the most exciting thing that ever happens to us, right?
People are my favorite animals. I love that. You know, you think about that, but it like it does mark the like subjective experience, and there is a part of that where you say, okay, this thing ranked up there with the birth of a loved one or like a death of a loved one. It's like meaningful things. And what they mean by that is this thing was so transcendent, meaning I'm still here physically, but it took me away from this subjective experience it is of being me, of being Andrew, of being Nassim, of being Mark, that I'm so used to, this trench I'm always in. For just a moment, I could see something different. And in that moment, I, you know, let go of these attachments I have. I let go of the fact that like, oh, this is how I've identified myself. This is what I do. I was just there. And that's, I think, some of the beauty is like, you see people that are like think bigger, kind of get out of that stuff. They have more experiences with this kind of, I don't call it transcendent, but it's like enlightened. I think in
it is somewhat transcendent when you're in it. Yeah, it is.
You, because what are you transcending? You're stepping. So there are these, there are safety mechanisms, there are attachments that basically think about trust. Trust is this ability to feel and engage and integrate with the world around you. Like mm-hmm. I trust that this table is here because my sense that I feel proprioceptive feedback, that this is reflective of a hard surface that is there, has been working for me for 28 years, almost 29, getting older. It's been working, so I kind of have trust that this is there. So if I have feedback that my feet are on the ground, that's good, which is why injuries can be so disrupting, because it's like you can no longer trust that your back won't just give out, and you no longer – so that trust contracts us. Pain contracts and pulls in. So that's what we're transcending is – you can think of pain broadly. So pain is a physical pain, is psychological pain, is, you know, emotional pain. There's all kinds of pain, so to speak. But a pain is something that contracts and pulls you in. It's a safety mechanism, right? And things that transcend allow you to step – you let go. You enlighten. Like enlighten. You let – you unencumber, right? You step away. And so that doesn't always mean – that's why people talk about like mushrooms and meaningful experiences. It doesn't have to be that. It could be literally like – and I think we were talking about it. You having that child is a transcendent – like world-changing experience because you just for a moment you let go of this thing you've held on to for so long, and then just in that brief moment something can sneak in. Wait, oh, maybe it doesn't always have to be like that. And then you look at the way your son looks at you and say, oh, maybe it's not always how I think. It's like that's beauty, and it could be like love. It could be like there are just these simple things that I didn't really go back to love, but like that's part of it. And so once you kind of get that crack in there, so for me it was like you get a few of these things, and a lot of times it can be like things like going through a divorce or going through a losing a dear friend. It's like losing a job, having a pandemic, whatever it is. That like sometimes it can be a positive thing. Like I think mushroom trips can be positive or negative. Like let's say transcend, like having a child, meeting somebody, like they can be good, but it can also be negative things. Like the thing I was, you know, I'm sure you've had like back pain or knee pain. It's like I just kept grinding through it, and then all of a sudden I didn't listen, and all of a sudden pop, something went, and it's like, all right, I got ripped out of this thing. It can be, you know, like for example, going through, like I mentioned, the divorce or something that's difficult. That anything that those can be not fun, but transcendent experiences. But the point is that when you have things in your life that separate you from this trench you're in of being you, you get the chance, and some people are terrified from that. And they immediately, like, just think about somebody you know that's in a bad relationship, they're with an abusive partner, and they know what they're doing, like, why don't you leave it? And they're like, you know, it's like, they'd rather deal with the devil they know, so to speak, this kind of fear, than like step away because of, we're not afraid of the unknown, we're afraid of the loss of the known. And so if you don't have trust in yourself, that's not a meek word, that's Anthony DeMello, greatest mind out there.
I know, but it's so true. Like, we all can probably remember shit where we were like in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is that,
Even losing something that doesn't even mean that much to you anymore. Like in the case of, we've talked about this on the show before, you know, two little kids playing with toys and then one kid, you know, and one kid discards a toy. You see it with your eyes, like the kid doesn't care. That toy's been sitting there for a while. And the other kid, the smaller kid, usually the younger kid, goes to play with that toy. The guy wants it back right away, right? So it's a lot like that.
And so this is... we have two options, right? Whenever things like this happen, is the Viktor Frankl, like you can't control what happens to you, but you can't control how you respond to it. Like we always have that choice. And eventually, if, you know, there's different, I don't know anything, but the idea is like there are different like thoughts around this that life is going to continue to teach you the same circle. Like whether or not that's a belief I hold and whether or not it's actually representative of reality is second to the fact that it's a useful mental model to think about what if there was a unifying force in life that was teaching you things and what if you keep kind of going through the same bad relationships.
That's been my experience, that it is a circle,
Until you learn that lesson. I think of it as a spiral, less than a circle.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say the same thing. It's like for me it feels like a circle that is connected like a – Like maybe like rings, you know. I feel like I'm still moving forward, but it's like, you know, like for example, when we have people on, this just happened. Like the shoes he was wearing when he walked in, you know,
The Vibrams,
Had that 2 days in a row.
Just had Brandon on,
and then someone else will come on the show, and they will seem like they're not anything like the previous guest, but then they'll mention the same exact thing that we just heard from somebody else. So. Yeah, I feel like there's these repeated, like I want to stop for a second and be like, am I in the Matrix? Because there's these repeated patterns that kind of happen over and over and over. And I told Andrew from like the time that we started, like when we'd go to trade shows and stuff and when we'd meet people, like, I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but I'm like, all this works in like a circular motion. Like you'll see, we're going to like, we ran into Ron Penna, like, he's really cool. We're going to run into him again. And like, this guy's going to be a part of this. We're going to run into Bruce Cardenas. We're going to see him again and so on. And it just kind of keeps going. And you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, I got told 2 times in as many weeks that it's more like on the mental side than it is the physical side of my back problems. It was you and JL Holdsworth.
I want to encourage you to stop using the word of problem, though. It's like you don't have problems. Your body is offering you feedback for something that's there. Because when you think of yourself as a problem, my body's a problem, my body's mm-hmm. brain's a problem, mm-hmm. you're just going to trade it and say, people that go, you know, some people have back pain, some people are just depressed. I meet a girl who goes, I have anxiety. It's like, that's an interesting belief you have. Like, you think about that, but like, that's just a challenge in the words. The words you speak mean a lot in terms of how you think about it.
Fire!
I think the awesome part about it, Andrew, is that you're doing stuff about it. Like, you're constantly working on it. And so, you're going to find relief. And I know, like, I think sometimes when we're in something, we feel like we're so stuck there. Mm-hmm. We'll say always, never.
Good, bad, should, can't.
I've tried everything, but I'm in pain all the time. And then you say, well, what about last night when you, you know, had sex with your wife or something like that? Like, well, I was feeling pretty good then, actually. You know, you kind of forget.
So here's a good point, though. Think about what orgasm is.
I had to
is.
Put her butt on a pillow, and then I was good.
Yeah.
But think about that.
Hey, that's great. Yeah, let's go.
Did you orgasm?
Yeah, of course.
So what orgasm is, it's the French word for mini death. It's like, it's like literally, it's an ego dissolution.
I didn't know
literally,
you spoke French.
I don't. Just the love languages for the ladies.
mini death.
You can look this up just to double check, but it has to do with like it's the asgasm is like there's the idea of the death, and so the point is that you are dissolving that ego for just a moment. So this is part of the reason, like you look at sexual performance, I guess, as a topic, but it's just like you think about this is like if you're
la petite mort.
Yes,
I don't know if that's how you say it, but
it's beautiful.
That's not in Spanish. Well,
yeah.
So like, but that's the point. That can be a transcendent experience too, which is why a lot of guys chase porn because they're literally stuck, and the only thing they do is like if they kind of do this thing and rub this skin a little bit, it's like they get this brief moment of letting go, and it's like I die, and in that brief moment, and that's where like when you're really like in it with somebody that's meaningful, you have this connection, like that's one of the most transcendent, which is interesting how life is created in that way. But another thing is orgasm and ejaculation are different neural circuits, so they're not the same thing. But the point is, it's like. You might have been thinking in the whole time, you know, you're there. It's like, okay, I'm there. Like, my back hurts, my this, this. And then it's like you finally let go. Like, this is why pain can affect sexual performance because it doesn't let you let go of that. In order to orgasm, you have to let go of this thing. Unfortunately, for a lot of men, they've trained themselves to be a fucking sprinter with that stuff, like a porn, you know, let me go to space again and move on. So stop looking at porn. Stop. It's like.
Andrew doesn't look at porn.
Oh, we're talking to the general public now.
I'm talking to you right now.
You, the viewer. Okay. Andrew, is the camera on us?
Yeah, it is, but you can look at your camera over here.
Which one?
That one right there.
This one?
Yep, there it is.
Guys, take your hand off your meat. I know you're watching the podcast and you're enjoying it, but take your hand off your meat right now. Stop masturbating to us.
Yeah, why are you squeezing your cock right now?
Take your hand off your cock. No more porn. All right, Graham, let's go.
Well, this is one of the things is like the word, like this is bad, as opposed to when you accept and you leak that energy into processed sex, so to speak. It's like processed food. Like, I don't need to not eat cheat meals. It's like, I just need to realize I'd rather have real food. Like the difference between going to like a gas station and getting like like one of those little, or like the little mini things that are like wrapped up. It's but I'd rather just have the real thing. And once you realize that you're trading, you're never going to like, hold your standards higher. It's like when you watch porn, you're just saying, yep, this is what I'll settle for. And then women fucking pick up on that shit. They go, oh, this is one of those guys who'll settle for whatever is free. Okay. Like, just think about the message you're sending yourself. It's like, yeah, whatever. So like, think about it. Your body will change when you stop accepting processed foods. You're just like, I have higher standards for myself. Mm-hmm. Your mind will change when you stop accepting processed information. Like, I'm not just going to look at TikTok for 3 hours. I'm going to read a book or find a podcast and educate myself. You know, your relationships change when you stop accepting processed like junk, basically whatever someone else is projecting on their baggage. Like, I don't accept that. I'm not going to move it. And you just move on. But it's not like that doesn't have to be a good or bad thing. It's just like, I just choose better for myself because I internally see myself as someone that is worthy of better. And it's like once you live, when you bring the external environment in line with the internal, whatever direction it needs to change. And that's why sometimes like if you want to change your body, starting with the external action. So like I'm surrounding myself with better people. I'm joining a gym membership. I'm finding a coach to hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. That change externally allows you to start to adjust the internal. But you can also just think like, what would a healthy person do? So for Andrew, what would someone whose back didn't hurt do? You know, what would like, and it's hard, right? But you know, you don't want to jump too much. Like I'm going to go do a 500 pound deadlift, but it's like, okay, would they worry just as simple, like would they worry about bending over to pick something off the ground? No. So then like, try that on. And it's always just remembering you can step through this. And that's why having a coach, having someone, because when you hire a coach, what you're really doing is hiring their belief in you. And that, like, that's the most important part is it's not about, you know, oh, this coach is going to tell me the secret to lose 10 pounds. Like, no, I'm just hiring someone that will, I can trust and lean on their confidence while I develop my own. And being around people is like, and this is, it's, there's no rules. We're all making it up. But when you surround yourself with people who have that, and you can get confidence through lived experience, but if you don't have the lived experience, you don't have the capacity to go and do that yet, you can surround yourself with people that do. That's why a coach who generally demonstrates it, like, you know, looking at you, if I want to learn how to wrestle, it's like, or to grapple, it's like, I would surround myself and be around you and hire you as a coach because, like, this guy demonstrates that with his body, which is why there's the whole bodybuilding. And, like, you know, if you look at, let's say, I think steroids can be a great opportunity to extend, maximize your body. But like, if you look at someone that's like undercutting that process and not actually saying, I'm not putting in the work, I just think this pill is going to do it. And that's the thing is the biggest joke of people think that steroids do the work for you. They let you train harder. So it's like, motherfucker, you know, I think you're talking about with Lex Friedman and the grapplers. It's like his light week was 28 sessions a week. It's like, yeah, it's like this is letting me work harder. It's like basically, it's like if I had something, oh, I work too much, I'm not making enough money. It's like, oh yeah, someone else has taken a pill that gives them 4 hours a day so they can work more. It's like, that's the kind of thing. So,
but let's rewind real quick back to when you were talking about the belief and people around you. Because as Mark was mentioning, it is funny how things work in circles because we've been talking about belief on this podcast for a while now and getting into it. And then after that, we start having all these individuals and finding all this content about how big your belief affects your actions, affects your physiology, affects all of that stuff. But specifically when you're talking about those people that surround you, it is quite crazy how like when I came to Super Training in 2015 and I started training and I wasn't the strongest person, but at the gym I was training at before I was, my strength jacked up immediately because I had eyes like Mark, Marcus, Mike, a bunch of other people that were taking a look at the shit I was doing and telling me, hey, try this, try this, try this.
And boom,
I got stronger. And I believed in them and I trusted them and boom, I got stronger.
You let go. So you walk in with an entrenched thing. I can do this. I'm this strong. I'm this big. I can bench this stuff. And you walk in with someone and for a second, you the proportion to which you can grow as an individual with a coach is the amount that you let go of control. You can have freedom or you can have control. And when you want to grow and expand past this into the stretch zone, so to speak, you got around people who said, you know, he doesn't have a predisposition. Let's say you can bench 300 pounds. He doesn't think, oh, that's a lot of weight. He goes, I got to get a 700. And so his perspective is bigger. And so when you let go of and you trust a coach, which is what people do, they pay money and they kind of get the money is stored energy. So it's not like I'm making money off you. I'm giving you stored energy in a way that I'm investing energy in you. And therefore, you invest energy in me. It's an exchange of energy. And when he goes and says, he doesn't even have to say 300 is not that much. He just he talked the way he talks about it, the way he demonstrated, the way he surrounded other people. It's like, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it just is.
That's exactly the kind of shit he says. He's like, oh, that you could do that in a few weeks or you can do that in a few months.
And that changes. You let go for a second. And how much you can trust
him. I watched him learn a handstand yesterday.
Yeah.
And you'll be walking all the way across the fucking gym in a couple weeks.
In a bit.
There is a fear of success. And this sounds like the most silly thing if you think about it at face value. But there's a fear of failure we all get. Like, oh, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to lose this. Because it's fear of risk. It's loss aversion. If I try this thing and hurt myself, then I'm going to get eaten. So that's deeply ingrained. But there's also a fear of success that's, I don't know if it's a modern day thing. I don't know where it came from, but it's like there is this. Maybe it's like an enculturation as a kid. Like, don't be too good. You know, it's like, well, what would someone else think? You know, if everyone did this, would we all have enough to go around?
There's a fear of success because then you have to like perform that again. You're now responsible.
I think fear of success. Maybe this is. I'm just making stuff up, but you know, fear of success is future fear of failure. Like, okay, fear of failure. Like, I know what's safe. I can do all this stuff right now, and that's okay. I can deal with this because I've lowered my failure risk as much as possible in many ways. I'm risk averse, right? But if I have fear of success, means now that I'm successful, fuck, I've got this many more followers. I've got this much more money. I've got this much more. And it's like, then I could really mess that up. So I'm just going to stop that whole thing. So maybe it's fear of future failure. But like, that's the thing is you let go of this like fear of future failure and you just are present. And this is like one of the most, I think someone said it, we're afraid of how powerful we are. This is like a quote if somebody said that thing. It's like our greatest fear is that we are too strong. And you can look that up. There's something like our greatest fear is that we are powerful beyond belief. That's what I think it is.
like, we'll take it.
let's look out. Yeah, let's
yeah. Whatever's different, you just quote me.
hold on. Let me try it. our greatest fear is not in falling. So it's that one, right? Our greatest fear is not in falling, but yeah, something da-da-da-da, how powerful we could be.
Yeah.
That sounds right. Something da-da-da-da.
I got that part right.
If you really think about what that means, there is, you know, like if whatever you let go of and you just let go of and mm-hmm. you step into, you have capacity to do. And so this is the hard thing. Is like I realize when you start talking, it gets very intangible and like out there. But let's say, for example, this idea of like the people you surround yourself impact you. So think about – it goes down to your physiology, right? The way your nervous system – so I've got a sympathetic, which is my fight or flight, and a parasympathetic, which is my rest and digest. So mm-hmm. whichever one I'm feeding, and that gets the way you're standing, your posture, your breathing, the people you're around. Like when you are around people that are high anxiety, you're going to be higher anxiety. And it's not it can go simply as like the cues they're putting themselves off, the way they're looking, the fact that they're open up, their posture, their breathing. Like, and this is where you look at – you know, generational curses and families and stuff like that. Well, a lot of that has to do with like the habits they manifest. Do they have a fear, fame inside? Like, we need to get this right now. Are they worried about things? And like, we can, it's like the sixth sense. We can tell a lot of that by looking at other people, but it's not necessarily overtly aware. Like, it's hard to say, oh, he's doing that thing and I'm going to quantify this. And it's like, that's what it is. It's like, there's more to it.
Also, let me talk about this real quick. And you guys chime in if this has happened to you. Like the reason why I talk about a relationship I had before for 4 years, the reason why I reference that so much is because when I was in that 4 years, Andrew could see the difference in who I am mm-hmm. now versus who I am then. When I was in that, I was still working. I was still doing the things I needed to do, but I don't like blaming people. I take responsibility for staying in a situation I knew I shouldn't be staying in. Mm-hmm. So I did. I purposefully did that. I shouldn't have. But the effect that it had on like my growth.
Not a good word.
Oh, okay. Well, what should I have said instead?
You're doing the best you can with what you have. I have a very strong belief.
I truly don't believe I should have done. I mean, I'm grateful that I did that because I learned.
You're doing the best you can with what you have. If you knew better, you would do better. So that the should is implying that there is something you – like should implies a sacrifice. A sacrifice is trading something of greater value for lesser value. I don't think anybody makes sacrifices. But should is this fake thing that implies that you would have gone back and sacrificed something. But at that time, you valued safety, consistency. There was something you saw about like a good boyfriend doesn't quit. A good boyfriend stays in there. You are doing the best you can with what you have. You can have compassion for yourself and say, hey, I'm doing the best I could with what I had. I was learning and growing. I think that's just a different way because should is still – it's blame and it's like you're thinking backwards and you're rejecting a part. And you can't love your past. You can't trust yourself now if you reject your past. And if you reject your past because I should have done this, I was so stupid, I was so bad. It's like, I'm the best I could, you know?
That's where he was at.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I
actually want to flesh out of my mind a little bit. I agree with you. I look back on it, and the reason why I don't regret it is because I know I learned so much. So I'm like, I'm grateful. Yeah. I'm literally grateful for all of that.
Beautiful.
But when I say I shouldn't have, like I do think that I knew I shouldn't have kept in that setting. I did know better. Mm-hmm. But like you said, there was like, oh, good boyfriend is used, blah, blah. But what I was trying to get to was once I got that out of my life, once I stopped that relationship right there, literally the trajectory of my life was like here. I wasn't going down, but I was like here. And then it just went like that immediately because literally everyone else in my life, like, was encouraging, believed in me, good, right? I don't want to say that person was a bad person, but that was quite literally the only negative influence I had in my life. Mm-hmm. And once that one negative influence that was the closest person to me was cut out, my life went in a totally different direction. And that's why when we talk about, because we've mentioned before that you really need to guard your circle, and I truly believe that, like, whoever's listening to this, you really need to assess the people you keep very close to you. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say because I don't think that you need to cut out everybody. I don't think you need to cut out everybody that you believe is bad because like some people you can't, but at the same time, you need to maybe limit the amount of time you allow that energy and the how close you allow that energy to be to you because it really can meld who you are.
This is what the visual I was thinking about this was the idea of a walled garden, right? You look at like the masculine feminine interplay. There's like the masculine, we all have this within ourselves, but then there's also a different compare this in a relationship. But the masculine energy is the ability to set boundaries and say no. The feminine is to be able to enjoy and bring that. So think about this as like when you say cut out, it's like I don't have to cut you out as much as just set a boundary. And it's like this is the wall around the garden. And within this space that is sacred, you look at the archetype of like the Garden of Eden, right? Like there is a wall. There's obviously you have to have a container of this. And I don't know if it goes in specifics, but like there is a wall and then there's a garden. And most people get too busy focusing on the wall. There's a very like rejected, they're fear-based thinking outward. And too many people just were like, you know, well, you have to have, you can't have a garden if you don't have a wall. So mm-hmm. you started to create, and this is, for me, it was growing up of like learning to say no, learning to like trust yourself and like to have that confidence in yourself is like, it's learning to set up a wall. But then once you set the wall, some people get really good at setting up a wall. Like your back pain is a wall mm-hmm. because in order to have the, then it's like, okay, that's good. You got the wall. You set up your space. You're doing the morning routine. You're doing all the workout. You're doing the mobility stuff. What about the garden? So think about this is like, the wall could be the structure. I'm at the gym. I have the membership. I have the program. I have this stuff. The garden is playing. It's the, like, you think about this, it's like there's art and science. There's science and curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. There's like, there's the beauty of something, and then there's like the logistics about it. And this is, everything is these fractals. You go down this path. It's like, what does it look like to bring that into it? And I think that's where some people just want to love and want to do this, and it's like a little naivety of a childhood. It's like they're good at like creating that positive. That's for me. I was always good at like being positive, optimistic, want to go do this stuff and play, but I never really did a good job of setting the garden. I'd always overextend myself. I would say yes to people who didn't necessarily value that, and I would let in a lot of negativity, let the serpent into the garden, so to speak. I mean, think of the allegory right there. Mm-hmm. You let the serpent in, and then what does the serpent do? It causes chaos and ruins it. So you, like, that's part of it. For me, it was learning to set the wall, and it sounds like maybe for you it was the same thing. It's like,
yeah.
Think of people that are higher compassion, lower polite, or they're higher compassion. They tend to like, you know, have trouble setting that boundary. And so then for them to move in the direction of growth, I'm like, well, I'm being mean. I don't want to say no to them because then what if they think I'm a bad person? And then the other side is like, okay, so understanding what direction you need to grow into. But then once you grow in that direction, sometimes we get so identified with like, I'm growing, I'm doing my self work. I'm growing, I'm setting boundaries. I'm saying no, that's what I'm doing. It's like you get so much identifying that way that you forget like, hey, the whole fucking point of life is to play and have fun. And it's like, it's where like, I want to be this idea of like, yeah, we can fix your feet. Yeah, like the point is like, people, what should I do to fix my feet? What are the rules? What shoes should I wear? What should I eat? And it's like, good, I can give you some guidelines around that, the wall, so to speak, around your body. But I can never help you restore that play and say, the point is to have fun because no one gets out of life alive. Mm-hmm. So that's like, it's just understanding that thing. And as you're growing and you're saying that, when you set the wall, guess what the wall does? It allows the garden to grow. And I think this is part of the skill component of like when you're looking to move your toes, for example, or you're learning to like to juggle, or you're learning to ride a skateboard. It's like, there are these tiny sub-perceptual changes that are happening in your brain as you learn the stuff, you make new mental maps, and you're like developing this stuff that aren't necessarily reflected all the time externally. And so you have to stay with this, and you can get little tiny changes that are happening that then create a big breakthrough, and you get like a hockey stick of improvement. And those are the things that like you just have to – I mean this is an idea. If a process is not an ends in and of itself, it can never be a means to anything else.
Say it again.
If the process is not an ends in and of itself, it can never be a means to anything else. Meaning, I'm not working out just to be strong. Mm. I'm working out because I'm working out to work out. Like, I find the beauty in this stuff. Like, I'm not being a good parent so that my kid will love me.
Fitness is never ending. Nutrition is never ending.
Exactly.
Until you die.
Exactly. And so that's the thing is you have to identify that. You bring the internal environment to match the external, which is, I'm a healthy person. Healthy people eat, you know, eat real food. Healthy people set high standards for themselves for what they put in their body.
I think that's what makes social media a little bit unhealthy at times.
Yes,
processed. Because we don't really recognize that it's like in perpetuity. Like you're going to be doing this for a really long time.
There's two sides of that too, which is your consumption of this is like, okay, why am I doing this? Well, let me to learn. If I don't have anything set there, I'm just doing this. And that's like, it's a leak of energy. But from a business perspective too, it's like, you know, sure, I could go and post every day for 3 hours a day, but it's like, what does this look like to really personalize this and say, it feels right for me to post once a week and just to put a lot of time and energy into it? Or like maybe a podcast. And like we do all these things. It's like, you know, like for example, you have a very different style and you talk about this. You just post things as they come and they flow. And it's like, it fits right for you. But someone's like, well, Mark, you have to engage your click-through rate and you want to get people to look at this. And shouldn't you do a little bit better of a clip art? It's like, maybe. But it's like, I think part of maturing and becoming an adult is being more comfortable in who we are. With who we are. So like, you start to pull these pieces together and it's like when you change and you realize like because I think about this, it's like, why would you be having this conversation? Well, you notice and identify something in your life isn't working, right? And that's pain. That's feedback, which is why I think the shoes we wear, the clothes we wear, the drugs we take, the work we do, those are all things that block feedback. And if we don't like feedback, there's two people that can't handle the noise, right? So like you look at their mental names or conditions for those names. It's like they need a specific, like, and this is why I hate all this idea of like, I have anxiety, I've got ADD. There's self-limiting things because like, I just can't handle a lot of feedback. It's like, maybe, but you know, that's also an interesting belief you have. And it's like, I'm not saying it doesn't, you know, I got diagnosed with ADD at one point, but this idea of like, I just don't have good confidence in how to decipher and do this, right? I can't figure out the signal for the noise. So you go and you start to look at this feedback. What is this feedback telling me? And if I don't sit down and I'm just quiet with no music, no nothing, just to sit there and think and just listen. It's like what meditation is, what journaling is, but working with a therapist, just to ask you. The value of therapy is that they ask you questions and they force you to be introspective. And you, because you pay for it, you put energy into that. Because,
did you mention that you got therapy?
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. That was, I started the whole thing. My first thing, relationship wasn't working in many ways. It was this idea I built my whole identity around. I was like, I'm going to be a good Christian boy and be married forever. And it just like, got married when I was 21. Was
phenomenal. You were married before.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So still working. Yes. Married. So I got married when I was 19, got married when I was 21, and separated after 6 years. And like,
wow.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. But so much of that was identified as like, I desperately wanted security and certainty in my life. So when I was young, I was like, this is what I believe. This is, and then you go and fight that. This is why it's wrong to do this thing. You shouldn't do this thing. There's a lot of shoulds, good, bad.
Yes.
I wanted to know what I believe, what I was going to do, who I was going to marry, what my life was going to look like, where I was going to live. I wanted as much certainty as possible.
Now you're taking mushrooms and running with no shoes on.
Exactly. Literally. And you think about that. So this is the idea of like play. I was thinking about this the other day.
Yeah.
Play involves, so why are there sports you play and sports you don't? Like you don't play jiu-jitsu, but you play tennis. Now think about the difference is you involve vulnerability. You let chance come in. So like if I have a ball or a teammate, I can't control everything. Therefore, I'm playing because there's an interplay of like, I don't know what's going to happen. But disciplines like running, swimming, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, et cetera, those are things that I go lifting. I go and practice this because I control all the variables, which is why some people are drawn, more creatives are drawn to like play and things. Like, and there's, you can have play within this. It's like snowboarding, for example. Hey. Playing is when I say, I'm on top of a mountain, I got to get down. A sport, a competition, the discipline is this is a half pipe and I'm doing this. The best people are always, the best athletes are always able to say, can I go into play? Can I play in this? Can I bring in creativity? Can I do this? And the more you can bring play into a podcast, right? You're like, some people go, this is what I'm doing. The nightly news, like so much of the structure, they go and say, this is what's going to happen. This is what did happen. This is what I think about it. And it's like, no, the play, and this is what people love podcasts because it's like, this is happening. This is magic happening as you go.
Yeah.
So that's part of it is like, I realized that this, every time I would go and create certainty, it was a limiting thing. And that limiting was okay because at that point that my worldview was always like, I need to be safe. I don't want to lose this stuff. And I held on to it. So this idea of like, this is my faith. This is what I do. This is why I don't do drugs. This is why, I had a reason for everything. And then as a, what happened for me, and I'd like to say, I was enlightened. I had all these good conversations. Like, no, that shit fell apart. Because guess what? You build a little structure. That, just like going on the beach, I'm building a sandcastle. I'm like, yeah, I got this shit locked down because I used the thing, the upside down cup to make the steeples on the side, the sandcastles, and I put a moat around it. Fuck you, ocean. And it's like, that's the whole point of like, you look at God, if you were to think and expand that into all consciousness and nature and everything that is, it's like, that's why God laughs in that sense. Like, yeah, it's an ocean, by the way. Oh, here's a tsunami. And that shit happens. And so this is the point is like—
COVID happened. Well, here's war. COVID disappears.
And so you go down these lines. It's like, okay, that's a whole fear-mongering conversation. I'm not saying the COVID part. I'm just saying legitimately the news cycle. If you're watching the news, you got better things to do because they are trying to, it's fear, and they want to get you there. It's one thing after the next. Mm-hmm. Let me know when they did a positive thing on the news, and we'll talk. The point is, every time I would try to have this God, so to speak, or the universe, whatever you want to call it, or just even life, or the fact that like I'm in, let's say if you want to go on the other side with this nihilism, I'm just an insignificant bag of carbon with a brain that can think about things that floats in the world. And then, this is just nature. And like whatever you want to call it comes and says, hey, the thing you thought you had, it's a shambles. It's like it's a fake intimation of what actually you're looking for. And so in those processes, and I'm stubborn as fuck. So like I stayed in things that were not good for me for long periods of time. And eventually you just beat yourself down. But eventually you get the opportunity. So like you're working with therapy, your coaches are taking mushrooms or doing something that like you just trust. And for me, it was starting to let in things. I listen a little more like Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss talking about the stuff. Like, oh, well, they smoke weed and they do mushrooms and they're not bad people. So maybe in a few years of that. And it's like these baby steps. And people judge themselves because when I was at the first, the greatest thing, I just like didn't have a lot of comparison to say, oh, well, Mark Bell is so transcendent and beautiful and amazing. And he's like, all the successes. Like, I wasn't even ready to think about that stuff yet. And so for whatever reason, I just like, you're going back to this idea of circles, right? You could say that, oh, the universe is bringing me something. So I always think about like, how do I, how do you phrase this in a way that it's not just like, oh, this is my worldview, woo-woo thing, so you have to believe this. It's like, you could also just say that something in your body, there's an intelligence in your body. I think that's fair, right? Your body, you're hungry, you're thirsty, your body knows shit, right? It doesn't have to be God, it could be, but like the other side of your body has awareness. And it's starting to attune to things. So you're paying attention to feet and you happen to notice it. there were probably multiple times where someone walked in with Nike Air Boost 15 times in a row and you didn't think twice about it, right? So you are attuning to words and things around you. And language is, it's like the verbal expression of our inner consciousness. So there's like, there are the subconscious, which are things that exist, facts, so to speak. Then there's our body, our behaviors, our physical awareness as we are attuned to. Then mm-hmm. ours are dreams, which are a explanation or our subconscious ability to express these things. And then there is our conscious, so how we actually manifest this in a words, thoughts, form, et cetera. And so we attune to this stuff. And so in this process, like people will judge themselves like, I'm not there. I'm not all the way there in yet. It's like you're taking baby steps. You look at little kids, like Andrew, your kid is like, you tell him, hey, you can't even jump on the fucking box. Look at you, little mush ball. Stand up. Like, you know, you're not doing that. You realize, hey, you're at the beginning of a process. And the hardest part is we compare ourselves with people who are so far down the line instead of thinking like, hey, this is what I'm at. And when, this is why I said, you were talking like, oh, I should have done this. It's like, no, you shouldn't have. When you should do something when you do it. The day you do something, the action is the signal that you're ready for something.
Yeah.
And even if you do it, quote unquote, and you freak out and you go back, that was your first step of learning. Like whatever actions you do, and the hard part is saying like, okay, well, how do you, you know, I think that there's most of people don't think. And so this is the idea of like, can we create, can we actually manifest anything?
When you say most people don't think, what do you mean?
I mean, they don't intentionally step back and remove themselves. So think about this idea of like, if you, there's reaction and then there's responding. And so that's what Viktor Frankl was talking about is, you know, you always, every person has the opportunity to think how you respond to something. And yeah. So like we are almost always just reacting. Like once I start the day as going, and in many ways, we don't even think about how we're reacting. It's like Sam Harris will talk about ideas like, oh, we're just, it's predetermined. Everything's going to happen. We're, you know, the only reason you're talking to me is because you think you've learned, you've been, your behaviorisms and mannerisms, how you smile and how you engage with me are because you were positively reinforced that as a kid and you grew up and it's how you identify yourself. And now you think of yourself as a positive guy. And if I do this and people like me, and it deeply, if you go down all the way, it's a very self-serving, independent thing.
Mm.
Or like that's part of it. You can be very pessimistic. And regardless of that, like that's part of it, right? There's the nature-nurture thing. But I think what separates humans as individual things that allow us to be unique along among the animal kingdom is the fact that we can pause and think of ourselves as objective.
Yeah.
Like I think that's – it's very rare. Even like for enlightened people may think 1% of the time. But like the most – the people you really look up to, like, wow, that person's got a lot of stuff. They're very introspective. It's like, you know, they set apart and they do this stuff. They're still responding 90% of the time. But it's like, and as you get more towards enlightenment, so to speak, you probably spend more time where you actually like are, you're not attached to things. But it's like, this is where the Buddhism idea of attachment is like, it can be good. But it's like, when you have no attachments, you're just kind of like, you're flowing around, you're doing this stuff. It's like, yeah, but attachments are how you get shit done. If Mark wasn't attached to the idea of making money, being successful, changing lives and helping people, he would not be pushing himself and busting ass. If you weren't attached to the idea of, I want to be a world-class grappler, you wouldn't fucking do anything. So attachments are what motivate us, but they also become a limiting thing that keeps us stuck. And so then it's like, okay, what does it look like to create space in my week, in my month, in my quarter, in my year to non-attach? And that's where you look at like therapy and coaching and journaling and mushroom trips. And it's like, sponsored by Big Mushroom. You know, if we don't do that, that's what we think. You think about this. When's the last time you thought, like you as a listener, when's the last time you sat down and thought? And it's a skill, just like everything. If I put you under the monolift and watch you squat and you never squatted before, it's going to suck. So just like everything else, it's like the first things you're doing, and every now and then we get this awakening. So you think about this idea of, it's like Wanted, I think, the one where they bend the bullets.
That movie was called Wanted.
But it's also an archetype of the Matrix, right? Where he's sitting there and it's like, he's just going through this stuff and he gets, this is the hero's journey, which is why an archetype that sticks with us is like, there's a call to the extraordinary. And sometimes that's what pain does for us. Sometimes we just like, you know, this is always, the wisdom's always been there, but we just need something to shake us up to listen to it. And it could be, you lose a job, you have a health scare, you know, you lose a relationship, something shakes you up. And at some point you can say, you know, this is why a lot of people just, it's an ingrained thing. And we breed this out of kids is like, they're like, I don't know if I want to do this. It's like, we just sit down, shut up, wear these shoes and go, you know, to school. Like you don't teach them to trust and listen to that. And then eventually they stop listening to it. And then we become kid, grown up adults. And then we never do that. So it is an unlearning thing. And I think it becomes a snowballing thing. But when these things happen to you in life, good, bad, indifferent, whatever it is, and they give a brief call to something new, you can step into that. And it will look so small and insignificant. Think about Neo in the Matrix. You know, at the end, he's like the one. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the one, Neo.
Yeah,
it's funny if you go, like, you know, I get high sometimes and watch movies. I ruin movies for myself because I'm like, this is fake. You're not a real person. You're acting. This is scripted. This is real. I can't watch movies anymore because I'm like, You're just a real person. It's acting. It's not even a real thing. You don't feel that. That's a fake failing. But his first thing was just like, if you go watch, he's, and I don't know if this is a Keanu Reeves mannerism, but he's just like, what? And it's like all of his movies. But it starts off just like things get forced and he's like, oh, I'm here. And then you go in the next thing, there's people shooting. He's running away. It's like we want to think that, you know, in a revisionist history, I always look back and say, oh, I knew my feet were going to be the secret of the world and I was going to be God coming incarnate and figure this out. Like, no. Like Jeff Bezos, all these guys, they have an idea what they can do. And then as they get snowballing confidence, but it starts with that simple, simple step of like, if you sit and think, and that could be as simple, like the thing that changed my life is, well, and this is why, like, actually I got diagnosed with ADHD by this therapist who was a ADHD specialist. And so I did a little bit of medication and this is actually after a mushroom trip. So like, well, I don't even think, so it's an interesting thing you think about this, but like sometimes it's hard to say this one thing helped it. So I never just say, go take mushrooms to figure out your problems. Go take ADHD medication will help. And I'm off that now. Diet changed that. It's a lot. So it's a different conversation.
We'll come back to that.
But the point is I was going to therapy. I was journaling. I was doing this stuff. And it's like that becomes the next thing. And so I started just one morning, got up and said, you know what? Like I was feedback. I'm like, I'm stressed. I'm tired. I'm burnt out. And I'm doing this thing where I'm working all the time, like 60 hours a week doing personal training. And this is relationships falling apart. I'm tired. I'm not feeling like I'm making the impact. And I could do the numbers and say, this is not going to support me to have a family and life if I want. And so then I was like, okay, I don't know what to do. So I just like something I had to do. I just get up. I met someone that inspired me to go write this thing. And I was like, who? I got up. I was just driving around trying to get business for the place I was working at.
Mm-hmm.
And I met this, as a chiropractor. So I went to like 100 different physical therapists and chiropractors saying, hey, you know, if you business referrals, you come and send your people. And this guy was like, oh yeah, he started his own business. So he's kind of thinking about that. And so like the things I was attuning to, I'm driving around listening to business podcasts, starting to think about marketing and stuff. I'm like, oh, I can do some of this stuff. And I meet this guy and he's like, yeah, you know, I was thinking about doing the seminars. I don't play golf. I've never played golf, but I was like, I'll write a golf performance manual. We'll do this together. And I just got excited. I don't play golf. I have no business doing that. But the fact that it was like, Any right-minded person said, that's a stupid fucking idea. No one's going to believe you.
Yep.
But I got up at 6 a.m. the next few weeks and just started writing. And that turned into the next thing. So then when I had another conversation a few weeks with somebody else, that thing I was doing kind of morphed into the next thing and the next thing. And it's so easy to talk yourself out of making a change because like, what do I know? I'm just this person. I'm an employee. I work for someone else. I don't have I'm not creative. Mm-hmm. I'm not strong. I'm not healthy. I'm not creative. I'm not attractive. These are all limiting beliefs. Anything that I'm not. You just choose not to build up and do that thing. Sometimes there are inborn things. Like I'm not going to be Usain Bolt. I don't want to, but it's like there are things that are there. But instead of focusing and identifying off what you can do, what can you do? And taking that just – but it all starts with the idea of I have to sit and practice this skill of just listening. Right? Like think about a little kid. They don't talk. They can maybe like goo goo gaga, make some like vocal soothing things. But they're literally – they're listening and they're developing and tuning their things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I can't have a conversation until I learn how to understand language. And I have to understand language by listening. And so at the first day you start to pay attention, like, hey, this kind of hurts. That's your body saying, hey, this is feedback. And that's like, it could be shame. It could be blame. It could be guilt. It could be physical pain. It could be any of these things. Like, I feel bloated. I don't feel healthy. That's feedback. Your body's telling you something. And you say, what is this? And you sit with it and you just kind of listen, just like a kid is going to listen for a few months, a few years. And then they could say, I like dog. I like dad. You know, whatever it is, like their baby language.
Mm-hmm.
Then they keep doing that. They get the skill and then they go and say, oh, I can have words. And when I can understand, oh, I can learn words, it becomes a snowballing thing. And it becomes this, as long as you stay on this growth thing and lean into it, it's like, and you have to let go of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
I have to let go of the fact that I can't say words. If let's say they don't have a belief, it's a here. It's like they don't have a belief. I can't learn words. They just like pay attention. They start doing it. It's like you have to let go of these limiting beliefs as you grow out. Like as you lose weight, you have to redefine who you are. Right? It's like you know you're a powerlifter, you're a big guy. It's like if we're talking about you've had multiple lives. It's like I have to let go of this identity I have as a overweight person in order to make room for an emerge. I have to let go of the old skin I've melted to make room for something else. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is just like. All of these things can happen. It's just a matter of do you – so when you were saying you're doing the words, I'm sure whether it's therapy, whether they're talking to people, whether you're just getting more in touch with this stuff, you have this ongoing language of talking to yourself, this dialogos. So like between the logos is knowledge is word and there's dialogos, which is a conversation between two or a third thing to be known. You can have a dialogos with yourself. Maybe it's your thoughts. Maybe you're just paying attention to yourself so that when that thing happened, you're able to say, oh, maybe I could go do this thing. Mm-hmm. And that's when it takes off. So it's like, that's why you go back to, I should have known better. No, you didn't. No, you shouldn't have. You didn't know better because if you knew better, you would have done better. And therefore, you were still learning, going along this path. And then, but you're developing the skill. And then when you have a crack in that foundation, something happens, good, bad, otherwise, oh, I go this way. And that's the thing is, and that's just like the point of you have to reflect. We're talking this idea of love. This is another belief I have, which I don't know if it's real or not, or
real
true
quick,
or not.
Do not lose what you're about to say right there. I want to mention how when you're talking about the individual that's trying to break out of that, that's trying to, let's say they want to start a business, or they've been living on structure, they've been going to school, they just know what they know. Mm-hmm. The best way, if you can't just get yourself around people who believe things differently, listen. Like you mentioned, you listen to a disgusting amount of podcasts and just so much content of people who potentially hold belief systems that you think that's sick, that you want to replicate. You probably follow people, like, I don't know how much time you spend on social media, but what you probably have on your feed is probably curated also to the things that you are interested in, the mm-hmm. things that you're interested in getting to, or goals that you have. Mm-hmm. And that is a simple way to be able to potentially get yourself around those people that you want to be able to achieve something like they achieve.
Yeah.
Start listening to
Absolutely.
What the hell they're doing.
Like, and this is, I walked in and he's like, the first time meeting Mark this morning, I know a fuck ton about Mark. I listen to a lot of Mark's podcast. I know all of his, you know, little secrets and fun stuff. And it's the same for you. It's like, you know, think about it. It's like, there's the old meme where like two people having a conversation, there's an empty chair in the middle and it's just like your face and the arms like in the chair. It's like, I'm in the room with them. It's like, thousands of hours of podcasts, I've become best friends with a lot of these people that don't even know me. And it's like,
same.
That's the beautiful thing. And so like, never before has it been so ubiquitously available. And so that's the part of it is like, never underestimate, like, this is what I'm saying. It sounds silly to think about, but we're driving around with this very limited thing of like, drugs are bad. You should never do these things. It's like, I had reasons for everything and it was very self-limiting. Mm-hmm. But then I started listening. I, you know, became good friends with old Rogan and Tim Ferriss and some of the early guys, the Barbell Shrug guys. And it's like, oh yeah. And then it's like, kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. And you, like, there's, I had a belief that if you do drugs, you're a bad person. You know, if you smoke weed, you're dumb.
Like, I had a belief that if you do steroids, you're dumb. Yeah, like I used to think like that's cheating.
Or it's cheating shit. As opposed to realize like, hey, this shit actually lets you work so much fucking harder that it's unbelievable.
And
it's
like, for certain sports, they like that's not a problem for those sports.
Exactly. So one of the things, and this is to go back to the, like, you can catch it if you're wondering like, how do I do this? How do I pay attention to what I'm doing? The first and most important thing you can do is to listen to the language you use. And this is the joke, you know, as Marcus said earlier, it was like, well, where's the yeah, but? Yeah, but? Yeah, but is literally you saying, I don't like what you said. It butted up against a worldview I have. Now I'm going to reject that. I am, yeah, but this. Anytime you say yeah, but, you have not heard the other person. There's listening and there's hearing. I don't know which one comes, but it's like you can, the words came in. Maybe you heard them, but I did not listen to you. And something you said bumped into, I'm sure many of the things I've said, if the language I'll use is going to trigger some people and they go, well, you know, if I'm a Christian, I believe this, or I'm a Buddhist, I believe this, or I'm an atheist, I believe this. And all of a sudden you're going to feel this when you feel like clenching your chest and he goes, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, but, yeah, but, like, you know, it's like, yeah, but if he'd understand this, but yeah, but there's this thing in the Bible that's like, oh, like, look, just hear that. Just hear that. Because like when you start to acknowledge and say, my beliefs are my assumptions that are based off my experience, they can be as true and as meaningful as whatever it is that serves you. But the question is, do you, like, there's two roads here. You can either continue to hold on to your beliefs and go down that path, in which case you are putting up blinders to things that are outside of that. And that is 100% fine. The question is that serving you? So if you're happy, if you're fulfilled, if you know deep down that you're living your life, you're passionate, your purpose, and you put up these blinders and it's just too disrupting to think outside of that, fucking great. If your body feels good, if you're healthy, you're wealthy, doing whatever it is, fucking great. There's no judgment. I don't care what you do as long as it's serving you.
Yeah.
The other side of that is saying, yeah, but, and then it's like, wait, that was valuable insight. Maybe something I do, maybe a self-limiting belief I'm holding is actually keeping me stuck. So let me lean into this. For example, I have a very strong belief. I'm thinking of this idea of like strong beliefs loosely held, this idea of like pushing with an open hand.
Where is that from? Yeah, I used to, there was a book that was from, whatever, keep going.
So the idea of like, I have a very strong belief that there's meaning, that there's purpose, that the things I do are connected with the greater consciousness, that we all exist, and the subconscious from all of us is God, and we have this ability to influence and grow one another, and our maturation through this generations and species is us growing towards it like this, and openness and understanding of God, that everything happens meaning, and that if we die and we create positivity in the world, it leads to heaven, which is a continued growth of the consciousness that we all exist with, and hell is when we understand the negativity and the pain we brought into the world, and we have to deal with that. I don't know if it's true. It's an assumption of mine. It helps me orient, and it's a belief I hold. That being said, it orients me in a way that says I can get up and go do this stuff. I'm learning a lot of Alex Hormozy right now, and he is a self-proclaimed nihilist, and his belief is that we're all just insignificant specks of dust. And
is he actually, though?
Is what he said. Okay. I think when you don't have kids, sometimes this is why I've now justified, because he bumped against my belief of like, well, when they're nihilist, he doesn't even understand we have purpose, and we were, you know, like I felt that in my chest. I'm like, well, but, yeah, but. And so I sat with that and I was like, I think that there is something about having kids that is the, for many times, I think there's self-proclaimed atheists that people don't have a belief in anything. It's easy to kind of, it's the logical perspective. If you really think about it logically, it's like, yeah, it's intelligent, it's smart. You can look at science. Science has to prove this. Where's the study? Like, yeah, okay, sure. But when you have kids, and you probably can see this, like I think kids are the first time for a lot of people that they really ground themselves to like, well, fuck, like you depend on me and what I do makes a difference for you because I want the world to be a better place.
But the yeah button there is that that still doesn't mean that we have a higher purpose. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't verify anything.
And that's all I was saying is like just the ability to really say like nothing matters at all, right? I think, okay, well, like sure. But what I'm getting at, like,
it's a feel, you know, it's an experience. You had a kid. Now you think that you have a larger purpose because you have another responsibility.
And I don't have a kid, therefore that's just another assumption in life. But I'm just thinking about this as like, what would lead someone to maintain and hold that position? But it is like, I hear him say that and that butts up against my, but there's meaning and we're all special and everything matters because that underlies a lot of the fact that I go out and I learn a lot and I push myself and I want to go and like create content that helps people and like get out of pain because otherwise, why the fuck would I care? Oh. That's when I sat with this and I was like, is a big growth for me of stepping and saying, well, you know, I have this orienting belief that gets me up and motivates me because then that gets me up and then that gives me something to do. And when I do that thing consistently, I get better at it. When I get better at it, it gets attention. When I get attention, people look back and I get more followers and that makes me feel good, a little bit of dopamine rush. And it's like, oh, I feel good. I'm special. I'm important. I'm the barefoot sprinter.
You know, in this case, like, do you think that there's anything further is going to happen by – like, just because there's no point in life that anybody can really verify – like, why would that control or why would that matter to you? Why would that structure the way that you live your life?
Fucking perfect question.
Because, like, for me, for me personally, like, I just don't give a fuck. I don't care either way.
Now, this is the insight I broke through, which is like, I just sat with that because normally I'd be like, well, he's stupid. I don't listen to him because he said a bad thing and he said the thing I don't like and I don't like that. So you're a bad person. I'm going to just shut you off. I'm canceling you internally, right? But I sat with him. I was like, why does this bump up against me? Like, why does that annoy me? Why do I feel – if I feel the need to change you, you've bumped up against me. And that's the thing is like I can't be wrong. Therefore, you have to be different. So I sat with that and I was like this morning affirmation, this thing I'm doing. And then I get up and I like orient myself and I feel the consciousness of the world. Like, huh. Well, if that's just a belief, then it also means I can believe something else. And it's like I sat and it's very uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable. But I realized – and his whole point is that belief just allows him to say, I'm going to get rid of the judgment and the shame around these things I should do. Meaning, I don't have to get up and do my affirmations because I'll be better as a business person. I don't have to go be nice to people because then they'll like me. I don't have to go and work out because then I'll be in shape. I can just do whatever the fuck I want. And it's like, but like doing what seems obvious and real to you that is meaningful without shame allows you to bring, so you can still do all the things. You can eat the food. You can go do this stuff. But if you're aware of it, you don't think I'm eating this to be that. I'm doing this to be that. I'm doing this so that. And it's like, if the process is not an end in and of itself, it can't be a means to anything else. And it allows you to just enjoy that fucking process because no amount of money, there's obviously money things will help improve life in many ways, but it's like, money can only solve money problems. And this is a guy who's made copious millions of dollars. It's like, oh, all right. He's still a person that exists. And so that's where I was like, you do the things that are meaningful to you. And then you can start to explore that. And you have the freedom to do that, to create. Like, I just get up and go say my affirmations because I like to. And it makes me feel grounded. I enjoy the way it feels. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to do this because the thing is, if I get up and I don't do that, does that mean the universe is going to punish me and that I'm going to be a bad person, that I'm going to be, rejected? Or that if I don't say, jump through the hoops, because if you get rid of the so that you can't and just do the thing simply because you do it, you're going to be better at that thing and be more grounded and you're going to stop bringing judgment. And that judgment is what pulls you out of the moment. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. So I learned
I think what might serve one person might be the total opposite for something that might serve somebody else. Somebody might think that we have this existence and that we have to live through God. Somebody else might not even believe in God, but like whatever you're using, like whatever is working, whatever is allowing you to, I guess, live the way that you want to live is the most important thing.
And it's very disconcerting for even for me, for anybody, because like the loss of the world, like think about it. Like if you're a little kid and you lose your parent, that's your world. That's your God. That is your worldview, so to speak. And it's like there so many people hold on so tightly to this. And it's like, what does it look like without that? Now, this is the thing. It's like, whether or not you could go down this idea of like, just on one hand, you could say in a long enough time span, we came from nothing, we'll go back to nothing, like everything is just a cosmic blip, maybe. But I would look and say like, no one can prove anything either way. So the idea of holding on to like there's nothing and that there's something like so strongly, it's like that ends up being a limiting thing. It's like whatever you feel like lets you orient yourself in the best possible way, even from a pragmatic level and a totally nihilistic saying, I just believe that if I'm nice to you, you're going to be nice to me. Like, and I, that belief is saying like, it's represented by the fact that it's worked for me so long. In general, if I punch you, you're going to knock the shit out of me. It's like, therefore I'm not going to. And so that belief is saying that, it's reciprocity of goodwill that I'm trading back and forth. That it's like, you can look at it very pragmatically and say, okay, I don't have to believe that there is this huge, massive thing called God, so to speak, but I can say that there is, I don't even know if you do have consciousness. I mean, you could be non-player characters for all I know. That's my favorite thing. I walked, there's a guy NPCs. Who runs every morning, and I'm like, I wave to him every single morning, and he never even once looked at me. I'm like, maybe he is an NPC. Maybe life is a simulation.
Well, it's every individual. Every other individual is an NPC, so yeah.
But this is the thing, is like most people, you can look in their eyes and see when someone's like thinking and they're connected and they're in there. And it's like, you know, there's people that will resonate with that. And so it's just like, I don't know the answer. No one does know the answers, but there is something you could even go and say, like, if so we all like, look at nature, for example, like we think of nature as like, oh, well, there's a problem where we bifurcate nature and say there's man and there's nature. Well, man is nature. We're all part of the same thing. But it's like, if you look at the definition of what God means, it's like, what God is like, not a person that's sitting up in a cloud in heaven. It's like God would be, if God, like as a conscious, like it would be the combined consciousness of all things. So, you know, look at like mushrooms as plant consciousness. You look at animals, you can see in the eyes of a dolphin or another person, there's something in there, right? And whatever that consciousness is probably not mirrored in here, but the combined of like, just think about this. We're talking about this idea. We had the idea earlier about the collaborations. Like that right there is a shared consciousness. And just the fact that you can look in your kid's eyes, they can grow and learn. It's like, there's something there. And even if that combined thing is something that I have the ability to notice and see, I can contribute to that positively. I can encourage, think about this. You talk about this, part of what you do and you share is like, I want to bring love in. I want to give positive messages and like just give people the positivity with no shame and guilt and tell people that. You do that from a reason of like, even if maybe you haven't thought about it, like, okay, sure, maybe there's a complete thing that you do that people like you, they'll buy your shit, you get more money and you can rule the world. Maybe that's the deepest underlying level. Or there's probably, the other part is like, if an ends is not a process, if a process is not an ends in and of itself, it can't be means to anything else. The process is meaningful enough for you to do. What is the process? Sharing positivity, sharing knowledge, improving things. Well, why would you do that? Okay, well, because there's some part of you that says that either it just creates a better society, creates a world, or alleviates suffering, that is love in and of itself. Therefore, love is the expression of you giving externally from an open area, from a full tank. Therefore, that's some, I would assume, it sounds like there's some type of a belief that there is a thing you're contributing to that is greater than yourself. Otherwise, you would just, you know, orient yourself in just a way to get that thing. But the process is meaningful enough for you, and there's something that fulfills you. When you do the things that you feel God smiling, so to speak, the guy says, when I run, I feel God smiling. It's like that thing is like when I share people information, when I give information and teach people, when I love people and I bring positivity, that makes me feel like that feeling good, that we call it serotonin or dopamine. It's like you can get very pragmatic and think about it, but it's like, yeah, but the feeling of love, the feeling of this thing is a connection to this. And sure, you can all just walk down and say, like there's different ties you can go there. But at some point, we're still orienting ourselves. People that tend to be happiest that I've seen are the ones that orient themselves externally from a full tank. They're happy, they're fulfilled, they address the pain and problems in their life, and they're giving. And when they give, that is an expression of orienting themselves towards quote-unquote God, and that allows them to be more fulfilled, enlightened, and grow. So whether or not you want to say that this is a pragmatically written down thing where these are the steps and this is the book and you need to read this and believe this, I don't know. And I think sometimes when we get the science of things, like you have looked at the study, it's like, well, where's the curiosity? Do we get all the facts? Or you look at the religion, which is like, this is what the thing says in this book. It's like, yeah, but where's the love? Where's the faith? It's like, there are these themes that I think that when we lose that, we lose the capacity to see other people clearly, see ourselves clearly, to trust and have faith that there will be a future that's powerful. You know, there's a lot there. But whether, like, that's the hard part, is just to be able to see that honesty and say, okay, you know, I don't know it all. These are just beliefs I have. And it's like, I can still appreciate and love you whether or not you say the things I say too. Does that make sense?
I'm out here just doing this pop star dance. These fucking legendary pop tarts are so great. Power Project family, I hope you guys are doing well today. But I want to show you guys from Legendary Foods, we have the Tasty Pastry. Now, you know, these things are 20 grams of protein and 5 grams of net carbs. Sometimes you're dieting and you want to be able to have a good, tasty snack that doesn't taste like cardboard. Well, this baby, it's not even warmed up. Imagine if you warm up this freaking tasty pastry in a microwave for like 20 seconds. I got my coffee right here, Tasty Pastry. I'm living life, and you guys can too. Andrew, tell him about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the other thing about this, so again, and Seema just mentioned 20 grams of carbs for a total of 180 calories for the whole thing. Oh. And the whole thing tastes amazing. If you guys haven't tried it, you need to right now. Head over to eatlegendary.com and at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT to save 20% off your entire order. They have those tasty pastries. They have all kinds of amazing flavored nut butters. They have almonds. They have all kinds of stuff. And you cannot help but laugh when you say nut butters.
Nut butters.
So yeah, you guys need to head over there right now. Eat Legendary Food. Eat Legendary.com. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
I think that we're not supposed to know, you know, why we're here. Like, I think there's a lot of things like that. Like, we don't even understand how people talk. Like, how I'm fucking able to talk right now without really doesn't seem like I'm thinking about it, you know? And there's just a lot of weird things in life. And a lot of things are, people talk so often about how hard things are. And I find that to be really interesting because, your heart just beats on its own. Your mm-hmm. eyes just do their own thing on their own. Like all your senses, like you don't have to do anything for them. There's a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like about, you know, your message and seeing the stuff that you do on Instagram with running is like, if we reverse engineer everything, right? Yeah. And we just say like, if you make a statement and say, running is healthy, period, right? Well, that's not a great statement because running, just like we all love to lift, we love lifting. Lifting is healthy, period. You know, there's different, mm-hmm. there's different kinds of lifting. There's power lifting, there's mm-hmm. bodybuilding, there's CrossFit. Now we're starting to talk about like competitive lifting, strongman. That doesn't seem very, like it seems like a great endeavor. It seems like a great thing to chase and a good thing to help build some personal development, but doesn't necessarily seem healthy. And then same thing with running, as you were mentioning, some of these athletes, you know, they restrict their calories, they stay really light, like that, you know, that they do a lot of unhealthy practices to try to run as far as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But if we're to kind of like just backtrack and put it in its simplest terms, running probably is one of the most healthy things that you could possibly do. Because if you think about like, you know, jumping and running, they're basically the same thing. You know, you're just going back and forth between one foot and another foot. Somebody that possesses the ability to run, and I'm not talking about like run, I'm not talking about like someone just taking off. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about some capacity to run mm-hmm. even just a little bit. It's pretty obvious that if someone can run, especially if they can kind of sprint, they're probably pretty healthy.
Yeah.
And I know like you talked a lot of philosophical stuff there, but when somebody goes off and takes a sprint, it's quite obvious they have let go of at least a lot of physical stuff. And you can make some arguments, maybe there's been some other things they let go of too, but definitely the physiology is there for them to be able to perform that run. And so I've been getting into running more recently, and so now it kind of seems like I've been converted runner or something like that, but I'm not even speaking from that term. I never really looked at it this way before. I've never really, once I started to run and I didn't have a great capacity to run, I was like, man, I'm actually, I'm a fool. Like I'm pretty foolish. Like I love to train. I love to lift. But now here I am. I can't even really run that well. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's pretty lame. Like there's a lot of people that could fly right past me, mm-hmm. you know, when I just started running. But I'm like, I was like trying to be this high level athlete. I was lifting all these big weights. I was doing these things. Right. And so sometimes as we chase something, we kind of lose capacities for other things, mm-hmm. but I do think that there is something to running, and I think that anyone that's listening to this right now, if you do not possess the ability to run, I just think that you should investigate it. And I'm not talking about like that you got to run 4 miles, 5 miles, 10 miles. I'm not talking about any of that. I just think you should have a capacity to run forward. You should have a capacity to run backwards.
All right, perfect. Good reframe. We'll bring it back. I promise we'll talk about pragmatic things. We'll fix the running.
Oh, guys. Yeah. Guys, I hope you guys listen to everything he just mentioned, but we're going to get into some meaty feet stuff that's going to change your fucking life, so stay
meaty
here.
Feet is not, it's not a euphemism or
meatyfeet.com? Do we have it set up at the URL?
It was hard to get the .com, I think.
You got we got the .net and the .me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
.feet. So you got a really good thing. So, and I think if you look at running, so this is there's two parts. One of which is like there's a limited definition when we think about running. When I say running, something is going to pop in your head right now. that may be ultra marathon, maybe mid distance, maybe long distance, maybe sprinting, like whatever you perceive that to be. And the point is, running is all of those. There's walking, there's running, and there's sprinting, right? Sprinting is like a max effort. Walking is just our way to recover and integrate with the ground. And then there's running. Running is this capacity can fill any of those things. You can make the argument that to run is to be human. So in order to run, literally, we would have gotten away from things, we would have searched for water, and we would have hunted. Like, that's running. So without that, we do not evolve as people.
Yeah, like run, throw, jump, push, pull, right?
Exactly. That, like, what you think of as an athlete. So this idea of athletes play sports is a limited – it's co-opted. It's like athletes have physical dominion over their body, and those are the things. What can you do? And if you think about running would have been – running and jumping, which is great. That's a great pull through. It's really the same thing as jumping from one foot to the other. Running and jumping are the way we've trained our legs. So you think about like a run or a walk would be a volume. We get a lot of volume. We develop resiliency and we develop strength in the tissues to build a foundation. And then sprinting and jumping are how we maximize the ceiling. We strain and we do that stuff. So if you can't – think about this. Running, I would make the argument that to be able to broad jump and to be able to sprint are the maximum – like the maximum expressions of athleticism for people. And people would say, well, you know, I can't do that. It hurts. That's feedback. And so that goes back to this thing of like, if you are not listening to the feedback, you end up losing capacity. And so that's where what hurts. Okay, my hamstrings would pull. My hip flexors strain. My feet hurt. My knees aren't strong enough. Good, let's lean into that. And that's where you step back and say, what does it look like to train? You know, I've happened to be a very big fan of ATG and what Ben Patrick's doing and that philosophy. But anything that gets you to train and break these components down to build that strength back up to, remember, build trust in your body. Because pain focuses you and constricts you. And that means you're no longer able to trust. If you're in pain, you don't trust. If you hurt me, I don't trust you. This back and forth interplay. And if I'm in pain, if my knees hurt, I don't trust my body. If I'm not afraid, if I feel like my feet are going to break or my hamstring's going to pull, I don't trust my body. People say, well, it's just because I'm not meant to sprint. Or yeah, it's just because I have flat feet. Or yeah, it's just because I'm wearing these Hokas or whatever the shoes are. That's you go back to this belief, right? What does it look like to let go of that belief and to build trust and then say, okay, I don't just say I'm going to go believe I can sprint, I'm going to go trust. And that's where I go to say, let me go and what does it mean to build trust? It means to do concrete actions that then manifest the capacity to have trust. I trust this table is here. So, for example, we're talking about with you. You lift, you train, you move, you get under bar, you know how your body's going to organize. That's the discipline part. I can't play if I don't have the discipline, the walled garden. You go all ties together. You can't go play jujitsu if you're worried your shoulder's going to come out. Mm-hmm. You can't play that. You can't go and play sprinting and running and jumping in sports if you feel like your body's going to fail. So then what does it mean to develop confidence? I have to go back to the discipline. I have to create, I have to peel all. If you're in really bad pain, you have to peel back all the variables to just a basic little thing. I have to now move my big toe again. I have to push a sled. I have to do a squat. I have to do this stuff to develop. But over time, that capacity gets you more and more trust in your body. And when you have trust, you can express that through playing, and that's human movement, and that's what it means to sprint and to run. Now, we can talk about exactly what that looks like with feet, but this is the thing is far too many people, the conversation about running has been co-opted by people who go and run distance. Mm. And they just think, because think about it, when you can't sprint, you just start, when we lose this trust, we start to lower our expectations for what we think we can do. And it goes from, I can sprint, well, now I can run, now I can jog, now I can walk, and now I can walk on a treadmill with Hokas. And so we lose that. And then eventually there's pain around psychologically of all the things I can't do. And then that makes me feel shame. Then I say, I don't like feeling this, so you're wrong. I'm not supposed to be able to sprint. I've got bad feet. I've got weak ankles. I need these shoes. I need an orthotic because my doctor says so.
Let me hop in real quick on what you're saying right here, because so many people listening right now to this episode, a lot of us are lifters. Sometimes when I would talk to individuals who are runners who would like run long distances and they are in shape, they tell me that. I'm like, man, that's super impressive. It sounds like torture.
Yeah.
But you know, but it's a harmless thing. I'm very impressed at what they're doing, and I'm not trying to diss them, but more so that's a belief on if I did that, that would be torture. I believe that if I do that, that would be torture. So why the fuck would I even do that? So I limit myself with my words and what I'm saying, but that also takes an effect on the actions I take because I'll never take that action.
Yeah. When this is the thing is like, so the commercialization of running, it's so hard to understand running without understanding the history where it comes from. So think about this. The companies that have shaped how we think of running were not around till the mid 20th century. So think about this. Running as a sport did not really happen until 1896 with the first modern Olympics in Greece or Athens, one of those two. I think Athens is in Greece. That probably made me look dumb. Whatever it is.
I don't know geography, bro.
I'm a personal trainer. Don't expect much from me. So 1896, first marathon. 1897, we have the first Boston Marathon. The next year, there are five marathons. People started to pick this stuff up. The early 20th century, we get what? The World War, Great World War, World War, where we need millions of young men at the time. They need millions of young men to go fight. And guess what? people at that time, the activities of daily life were sufficient to keep them healthy. And this is something people talk about, nutrition, what you eat while we're all overweight. It's like, well, you can look at the fact that we made foods that weren't around 100 years ago. But 100 years ago, people weren't overweight. They were just out of shape. They're weak. They couldn't go and do this stuff because they were just kind of living their stuff. We had just in the beginning of the industrial revolution where it takes over. We have technology that's replacing some of the stuff we do. People are out of shape. So they create the presidential fitness thing where they knew we need you to be able to go and do this standardized testing and like jump and run this stuff. So you create that and get people engaged. World War II happens. We need millions of people. And these young men and women are enlisted. And so we get in this area, right? So most of the literature we have around training and exercise comes from military because the applications of the president, the people don't believe that we're strong enough to go and be able to like hold and pick up things and go do things and fight a war. So then it goes, okay, well, now we get to the mid-1950s, 1960s. We have fake food, the first heart attacks, the first real beginning of this predictable metabolic disease epidemic picks up, and then people are out of shape. And then we think, we need something to change this. So the common cultural narrative is like, we're now getting overweight, we're having diseases, something needs to happen. So you get 1967, Bill Bowerman, who's the founder of Nike, eventually is Blue Ribbon Sports, or first is Blue Ribbon Sports, goes down to New Zealand, meets a guy named Coach Lilliard, who is the Olympic coach there, and he's created something called jogging. Jogging is supposed to be done on your heels, the heel to toe, and it's meant to be a specific transition technique where you're getting people developed stronger, right? It's his thing. Bill Bowerman fucking loves it. He eats it up. He comes back, writes this book and called Jogging, and he introduces it. Then in the 1970s, you get President Nixon. You get 25 million Americans to take off. It's a Farrah Fawcett. All the people were there. It just becomes this natural thing. Now, you got to think, that's the first time we've commercialized, we've created something popular doing that. Because in the past, before this idea of marathons, some people would do it as a fringe sport thing, or people that were athletes, people would go to college, they would run, they would do this stuff, but it was never like a, oh, Mark, did you go for a run today? And be like, why the fuck did you do that? Is your car broken? You know, or like, is your bike broken? It was like, you know, there are people that either worked and their life was hard, or there are people that didn't work and their life is still hard. They had to go do, you know, work at the meat processing plant. So you get these people, it takes off, there's, you know, 25 million Americans are going to do this stuff. In step with that, Bill Bowerman, who's coaching an Oregon track, has this shoe. I think it's the Nike Cortez or whatever. There's the first version of that. Mm-hmm. The first time he's putting foam under shoes. And so he's selling them out of the back of his car. He goes, writes this book, Jogging Takes Off. Nike releases the Nike Cortez in 1972, which is the first to use ethylene vinyl acetate, EVA, as the first foam, which is still in use in most shoes now. That baguette pops out. 1974, they have the waffle trainer, which he takes a rubber thing, makes it on a waffle iron in his kitchen with his wife. So he's one of those, like the first Mark Bell, you know, he's out there making products like, hey, we can do this. This is, it's stretchy, you know, it's a slingshot. You know, he's starting to do this and it's like, that's actually a great analogy. I'll come back to that. So then you get 1970, you get Brooks. So you get some of these companies. So New Balance is 1890. You get, I think Converse is 1910. You get Adidas and Puma, which are 1917, somewhere in there. You get Nike, which is 1972. You get Asics, which is 1977. They were actually a conglomerate of Japanese companies that came together and formed it. They're super interesting. You want to look at something, go look at their history of shoe models. You get...
Yeah, I just looked up the Nike Cortez too also.
So now, if you actually go back, that's such a great example. If you go and put shoes in reverse for what we have now, and I'll pull up a Nike Alpha Fly as a comparison, if you can do a split screen. You'll look at that as an interesting thing. You know, the story from 1972 is that these companies, Brooks, Asics, Saucony, Nike, start to just throw different technology. They're all trying to get their different things. So, you know, Nike, first ethylene vinyl acetate, that's the modern. So if you take a reverse story from that all the way to that, you get
those things are amazing. You fold them in half. If you have them on the ground, they'll jump forward.
There's alone,
carbon foot plate in there.
That actually made the Olympic, the IOC, create rules around what they could put in shoes. It couldn't be more than 40 millimeters tall. You couldn't have more than one fiber plate. You couldn't have like...
And it rocks too. You see how the back end of it is like... You know,
we can talk about that stuff too.
Oh my gosh.
I wear something similar when I run. It's not quite as cushiony as that, but my thought process was like, I don't know anything about running, so I'm just going to get a shoe that assists me because with every, I just was not accustomed to it.
Let me flip this around. I don't know anything about squatting, so I'm going to get a belt and then I'm going to go and squat. It's like, you hear that as a coach. I don't know anything about powerlifting, so I'm going to get this rep.
It's not like that. It feels more like a slingshot. It feels assisting. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now you can see how that can be good. So we'll come back to that.
And I also can understand how it can be bad.
Yeah. Now you look at 1970s ago, and so these companies go back and forth. Asics has their gel. Saucony has their carbon fiber wave thing. Nike had Adidas has their Boost technology 2013, Nike has their Zoom, you get Hoka, all these companies. It is literally a gimmick back and forth. It's the same thing. It's just one company is trying to say, hey, this is our technology. This is what we do. We go back and forth, back and forth. Mm-hmm. And since you start the 1972 with the Cortez, it's pretty flat, pretty minimal. And now you get all the way up. So the problem is 1970s, people start jogging and they're jogging. They're literally being told, like, it's funny. There's a girl, a coach sent a video of like jogging form from her PE class in college. And it's literally a girl heel strike. And they're being taught that. And it's not that it was wrong. It's jogging is meant to be on your heels. The question is, before 1970, we all knew that running was running and walking was walking. And there was no in the middle. And the people are like, oh, I'm supposed to do this and I'm running. But the question is, you go and tell me how slow you need to run in order to land on your heels barefoot. And the thing, if it doesn't, you got to remember, there are billions of people in the world right now that do not have shoes. They are surviving. It's not that we need to do this. It's just that the form that has enabled us. So the technology should support our human function. If the technology fundamentally changes the way we function, that's when technology is no longer a supplement for us. Mm. And you go look at this. So now Nike's created the shoe and it's convenient because we get millions of Americans that are running. So then you get in and say, well, let me give you the shoe and it fix it. But then the problem is it just prolongs this. And now my injury happens because what those shoes do is they limit feedback, just like drugs, like everything else we're talking. I'm not getting that pain feedback to say maybe something isn't right. Mm-hmm. And so I get a thicker shoe. And Nike says, oh, it's not your running form, it's your shoe. Guess what? You've run through your shoes 200 miles, time to get a new one. It's like, that's a horrible product. You know, it's like, think about this. They're making the Gel Nimbulus 23 is not different than the Gel Nimbulus 22. It's not.
Is the Gel Nimbulus an actual shoe?
Yes, it's the Asics.
Oh, okay.
There's a 24, I think, is what they're at. That's not a joke.
You can pull up.
Like, that's Asics. And so they're making these shoes every year, and they tell you, you can't run through it. You can't run too much. You need to replace it out. You need support shoes. We're going to fit you for this stuff. And guess what? People are still getting injured. There's a reason upwards of 50% of people who run every year will suffer a significant injury that causes them to stop running. Mm. And some estimates say up to 90% of people that run marathons will get injured. So something's happening. But
a big reason why people get hurt running, though, is just because they're really heavy.
Now, so there's two parts of the heavy, because you can be heavy, but your feet and body are still able to do it. The question is, are you heavy and out of decondition? Because you can be heavy and move. Right. There's offensive linemen that can
do
that.
Yeah, these are people that probably haven't moved in forever.
And that's the thing.
I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to go run. That's what they think.
And guess what? Walking is a phenomenal thing. And people would have done that colloquially. It was called pedestrianism, was the way they walked for sport. People would go watch people walk for days. Like, it was a sport. And people would have gone and done that. And they would have just been moving. But then it was like, oh, we need you to jog. And you can only jog in this shoe. That's like saying, oh, I need you to bench because it's the best thing you can do. But you can only bench with a slingshot. Mark Bell slingshot. You know, it's like, it's convenient. Oh, wait, your arms hurt? You need a better slingshot. Oh, this is the slingshot version too. Oh, and like, obviously, this is not your product, but I'm saying that's what we don't think about is, there you go, it's 23.
So what's funny is like, okay, that's 23.
What's the 22?
And then now here's the 24.
Oh, they got the 24?
Yeah, well, I grabbed the wrong one. Sorry, hold on.
It's okay.
They're like literally identical.
It's the 24.
But you need it because now there's, oh, wow. Look at,
like, no.
Oh, no, but it's a new carbon fiber on the bottom or something like that.
And so this is the thing, is these companies, it's like if you went to a Ford and you got a car, and then the next year is like, yeah, but that car is bad. It actually, you've driven too much in the car. You need to sell and get another one. It's they're trying to get you to buy the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And look, I don't want to sound like this consumerism and capitalism all destroy you. It's like, no, but that's the point is, in order to support the narrative that you need these shoes, they can't say that maybe you shouldn't run this way. Right? And should. See, I even catch myself there. It's something I believe, but it's like, it's evidenced by the fact that if you listen to the feedback, it's not ideal for your body. We can talk about the ideal running form, but it's something that every human has the capacity to do it. So the whole point is that you look at these last 50 years where it gets this bigger and bigger thing. You get 2006, 2008, the Lieberman, it's a guy who did some studies at the Harvard Spinal Mechanics Lab, did some stuff with Vibram, and he was looking at, they're comparing barefoot shoes. And what you notice is that there's two things that matter when you look at running. There's the total force, there's transient force, but there's force of impact, and there's on speed of landing. So when you look at it and you land, every footstep you take as a walk is 125% of your body weight force. So like it's 1.2 times your body weight going into each foot as you step. When you run, it's 2.75, so 270% of your body weight. That is the same if you forefoot strike or heel strike. It's the same. And people say, oh, I could midfoot strike. Midfoot strike happens less than 4% of the time. It's when you land perfectly flat. The middle of your foot is your arch. It is not meant to load bear. You can't actually land on your arch. It's not a realistic thing to demonstrate and work to do. So your only options are heel striking and forefoot striking. And for if you heel striking is just not feasible. And I don't want to sound patronizing with this stuff either, because if you go out and walk, even walking in your heels too firmly can be painful because you're landing into bone. Now, what these thicker heels sold thick heel-soled shoes do is they spread out this impact. So instead of landing, if you go watch the force plates, you land on your heel, it's a big shot up. And that rapid force is what creates the load on our body. Now, you can do that with shoes and you roll across, and what it does is it slows down. So instead of being a straight up, it's a little bit less of steep of an incline. But that compared that to a barefoot 4 foot strike where it's a slow up and a slow down, you're still getting that 2.75% to 2.7 times body mass force of impact, but it's a much slower onboarding. And now, yes, you can go and run correctly. So,
but you run a lot faster in the shoes, right?
Think about it. Have you ever seen a sprinter? Like people line up, Usain Bolt and all the other guys line up, and women and their various thing. Do they wear Hokas when they go do a 100-meter sprint?
No, but they're wearing shoes.
Exactly. So this is where there's two things. And I don't want to come off as being shoes are bad, because this we could do like 2 more hours of this stuff, but people don't give a fuck. But shoes are competition.
You're fucking
advantage.
Awesome, Graham. I got to tell you, man. We love you, bro.
Thank you. And so shoes are competition advantage. So you people say, well, I've got these victory insoles or these super feet. It's like what those do is when you wear shoes that have a stiff midsole. So there's real four components of shoes you want to think about. So there's how wide is the toe box, how flat is the sole, how thick is the sole, and how bendable is the sole. So think about this. There are differences and there are times when you would maybe want to have something like this and not have something like this. Meaning like if you have a thick midsole, that actually resists bending and acts like a spring so that you can be explosive and jump off. And so that resists bending. And so if I'm sprinting and I'm grabbing the ground, I want that plastic piece helps me to project myself forward. It's like a spring. Now, when you have big, thick foam under the shoe, that spreads out force. So, oh God, I can't.
I just wanted to pull up thick shoes. I just want to point out a couple of things. And I'm just being like contradictory just to be a. Just so the audience can get more out of this. So why Usain Bolt and those guys that sprint, they obviously wear a way different style shoe. That's pretty obvious. But you do run a lot faster in shoes. You run a lot faster in shoes on a track.
Do you?
And additionally, yeah.
That's a belief you have, but tell me more. What's
the fastest 100 meter?
So here's the thing, the grip. So it's what you think about is what helps you on the going with shoes, right, is the spikes that go into the ground and the starting block. But think about that. It's like the shoe is a manifestation, or the shoe is a physical thing that gives you spikes that grip the ground. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're running faster. It means you have better grip on the ground. Right. So, but the point is that like – the shoes actually are able, if the grip wasn't a factor, it's like, does that shoe allow you to run, put more
You can make up whatever you want, but people are faster when they wear a shoe at the time.
Okay.
Right? It's faster time.
Well, technical time, like if we're thinking times, then yeah.
Okay. I hear what you're saying, which is that the shoe as a technology allows you to create a better, faster output. Let's keep going there.
And what I was going to say is the reason why the shoes were made illegal, the ones that have more foam on them and the carbon footplate, is because a lot of the records were getting like destroyed. So the shoes work. They do help make people go faster. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are obsessed with. They get into some of these things, they get a certain time, and then they get a better time, and they get a better time. And they're like, man, I wonder if I could. And then all the attention, if you go on YouTube and type in like carbon fiber shoes, it's like a fucking thing. I mean, it's a giant rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So these things will assist you to get better times.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with everything you're saying here. It's like, I think this should be explored. People should look into how it feels to run in a minimalist shoe. People should explore what it feels like, even just to walk on some on the ground and feel how that is, and to run and sprint barefoot.
So the qualifier I would say is that correct running form in shoes is going to be faster because you don't have to worry about stepping on things. You get more grip on the ground. So yes, shoes are a technological event. I do not want to come off of saying I'm not doing that. The question is, if the shoe changes the fundamental way you're running, so correct running form in shoes was faster than you end up losing force capacity, meaning you can get away with this. So you look at like the guy who ran the sub 2 hour marathon, Eliud Kipchoge, forgive me for my butchering the name. You know, he runs in those Nike Alpha Flies, those massive ones, but he 4 foot strikes. So the thing is, it's just whether or not the shoe makes it harder for you to run. It's not, I don't want to get out there and say everyone should be barefoot. That's not a realistic thing. It's not what I care. I still wear shoes when I go and live and run and do whatever. But the point is saying the foot is the main motor. It's the main thing. And if the shoe is actually inhibiting, and I'm not saying all the time, because what you're talking about is a specific output of like, I am in a competition setting. I'm trying to do this. Just like saying, does wearing a lifting belt help you, like straps and belts and singlets and all this stuff help you get more space? Absolutely. Because we need to get to that point. But if I go, this is the thing is like, I show up my first, you know, coach, you're going to train me how to lift. And I show up and I got my singlet, I got my fucking strong belt that's, I can't even pull because it's so big. I got my chalk and I'm smacking myself in the face and I got my smelling salts.
All right, let's do it. You got it down pretty good.
I've been following you for a while. You think about this, it's like, and I show up on day one, you're like, have you ever squatted before? No, but I'm ready. Let's fucking go. It's like, I got the stuff. For the first time, most people, they're sitting around and maybe they played sports, have been around, they put on some weight and they go, I'm going to go run. What do? They go to the shoe store and they get fit by some pimply faced kid who doesn't know how to run, puts them on a treadmill and said, I think you overpronate. And I was like, then guess what? Day one, I'm learning to squat on a thick fucking belt with chalk and a singlet. And I was like, I don't even know how to bend my knees. And all that stuff can be helpful, but you got to peel that back to say, am I doing it right at the first place? Can I even bend my knee? And that's what I'm saying is that when you get to that top percentage, fuck yeah, do whatever you can. But I'm saying everything up that being the shoe, like there's a reason. Think of a Kipchoge. He is grew up a poor farmer running 2 miles to school every day back and forth. And they don't have Nike outlet stores wherever in Ethiopia. I forget where it is.
So Ethiopia?
I think it's Ethiopia.
Yeah.
They don't have Nike outlet stores on the corner over there. So he's doing it either barefoot or minimalist shoes and it's just doing it. So his feet get strong.
Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they have stores there? Because aren't they the best runners?
No, right? Because America's pulled out of Africa and now China's putting in debt. So China's Nike will be there eventually. But you see this is like the commercialization of running has changed the way we fundamentally think of it. And instead of saying my feet are strong and capable and can do this, I say, what running shoes should I have? And it's like, it's been so beaten into us that it's hard to think about that, which is all I really want people to say. It's like your feet, if anything in your body should be nailed down by your evolution, it's your feet. Mm-hmm. They're how we interact with the world.
What can your feet fix? Are you seeing like, because you're doing a lot of stuff, you're helping a lot of people. I think the knee is probably obvious, but what about the lower back? What about the hips? What about shoulders? Do you think there's room to help people with all kinds of different things from the feet?
What's the most important part of a skyscraper?
The base.
Yeah. Base.
Why is that?
It's what everything is sitting on top of. Yeah,
exactly. So if your arches are collapsed, think about it just as a stacking process. If this leans just a little bit over too much, it falls over. That is what happens. I'm holding a water bottle and tipping it over.
I want to say this too. Think about this for everyone. Like everyone here is a lifter, right? Imagine that right now he's going to be talking to us about how we can strengthen and build our feet, your base. The thing that you reproduce force through, that's taking care of this foundation. If you can build the strength of your feet, imagine how much more you're going to be able to squat. Imagine how much more force you're going to be able to create through your feet when you deadlift. The amount of leg drive you're going to be able to create when you bench. Imagine how it's going to translate to those numbers
by having the dexterity. Your like, mobility.
Jesus Christ. There's everything.
I'm sorry. I'm so intangible and just way out here. And I'm not getting, like, I get what you're saying. Think about this. How much can you deadlift if you don't work on your grip? Like if you don't hold on to the bar?
Just as much as your grip can handle.
Exactly.
But unless you use straps.
If you don't train your grip, you can't engage with things and you're holding on to the harder you grip. So the same thing with your feet. If you lose it, first off, the pain is there. So if you have collapsed arches that almost represents by like turf toe, plantar fasciitis, Achilles pain, shin splints, your knees hurt, whatever it is, that's going to be an irritation. The body is not pliable and flexible and moving from the feet down. And that throws everything else up the chain. Your feet have 26 bones, 33 joints, hundreds of muscles, ligaments, and tendons. They're meant to orient and feel the ground and move and engage. They're how we balance. The big toe is the primary glute engager. There is nothing you would ever use your glutes for. If something's hurt, your back hurts, you go to physical therapy, whatever, it's like you need stronger glutes, you need stronger core, you need to stretch more. Well, guess what? You can't use your glutes if you can't move your big toe. That big toe is how we signal to the body. Just like I can't pick this water bottle up if I can't grab it with my fingers.
Everyone who wants a bigger ass, I want you to think about this. Stronger big toe. Think about this is why you got such a peachy booty, Graham.
You should see my big
this
toe.
This is the reason why. You got that big toe strength.
It is the equivalent of grab the ground, squeeze the ground, screw your feet into the ground. It means grab with your toes, engage, feel your feet on the ground. And if you don't do that, you're not engaging those muscles. And when you don't do that, that's when you get stapled in a squat or you can't pick things up. Even from a bench, you are driving into it. Your feet are how you orient with the ground. And if the foundation is not strong, it's not there. Mm-hmm. If you have pain, you will be inhibited. You will not be able to use your feet. You will not be able to create that strong foundation. You will not be able to orient yourself to the world that you are on. And that will limit everything else. So, you know, we could talk about a few things. We can go like the five layers, like how to fix that and anything else, like tangible stuff. So like, you know, what do you want to hear? What do you want to do? I can just talk for hours.
Since those shoes are here, well, actually,
Mark's
no,
like,
Mark,
Mark's like, this is a horrible idea.
No, I'd like to just add that anyone that's listening to this, like there's some people that maybe are still working on their diet. They still are a little bit heavy. There's, you know, so I think sometimes people are just like, man, I don't even know where to start with
walking.
Running. But yeah, I think walking is excellent. And I also think that running hills is a really great place to start, or even just pushing a sled, not running with a sled, but just pushing a sled. Mm-hmm. Josh Bryant, who does a lot of programming for a lot of powerlifters, will have people sometimes run with a sled and he'll have them go like 70% and just use very light weight, because most people that are bigger, they need to be slowed down because they haven't been practicing running. A lot of people haven't been practicing running. Like it's odd when you're myself and you go out and run, you're like, I don't really think I've run much in like 20 something years. Mm. Like strange. Like I should have never, there you go. Should. it's something that I wasn't paying enough attention
to. You didn't
to.
Feel cut. Here's the thing. The reason you weren't doing it is because you're saying, I have goals, meaning I went to go. Sorry, I'm talking another thing. I have goals I want to do.
Right.
This I don't feel confident to do. And if the risk of me going and doing this thing is not worth blowing on hamstring and knee, therefore I don't trust myself. Therefore I don't do it.
And there were some versions of that I would do, because like we did the stairs, you know, out near the beach, and I would run hills a little bit, but I'd always walk downhill and I'd always walk the flat parts because I'm like, I think I'm going to like F myself up. But people listening that aren't confident in themselves, I would encourage you to go to a field, get barefoot, just walk, see how that feels. Maybe try to run backwards, or I'm going to say just like jog slowly backwards.
Yeah.
And maybe just see what you can do when you go to run, because you're logically, your eyes are going to map out the ground that you're on. Your body's going to be feeling every step that you take, and you're only going to run as fast as your feet will allow you to run.
Yeah. So let's break this to tangible things. What can you do if you're a lifter? Like part of this expressing, so think about if you have more power, if you can run and jump and sprint, that's going to be you being more athletic, stronger, more capable, right? So the higher your ceiling is, the more force you can put through your body, the more force in your body you can put through your body, the more strength you have. Three things I'd start. You want to think low risk, things I really can't fuck myself up doing. First, sled is just like really going slow, intentional, pushing that. And then if you want that to go, so all these things regress. They regress and go up. So the lowest form of a sled is pulling. The next step is pushing, very slowly walking, feeling the ground, thinking about making love with the ground with your feet. It's just like really engaging with that. If you want to scale it up to the top level and be explosive, push as hard and fast as you can for 10 meters. So that's, you know, the regression. If you have pain, the easy intro and the up thing. Or the top level.
Progression.
Yeah, the progression. Then the same thing, the next thing would be backwards. So walking backwards, if you have pain, pulling a sled is good. Jogging backwards to try and get a little bit more of this elasticity and bouncing. And then explosive running backwards. You really can't hurt. The only thing you're going to hurt yourself going backwards is tripping and falling. So make sure you're in a safe space to do that. Hill sprints. You can walk backwards up a hill as a very simple way if you're in pain. You can just even simply walking up the hill is just like to develop strength there, but then like jogging up the hill and then hill sprint. You really like, I'm telling you, backward sprinting, sled pushing, uphill sprints, those are the three things that you really can't fuck yourself up, but you can scale those up. You can run as hard as you want up a hill. You can push a sled as hard as you want, and you can backpedal sprint as hard as you want. And assuming you don't step on a rock or you don't like do the outlier things, those things allow you onboarding ramps to add the stuff in. And slowly you start to develop, because those are all strengthening the muscles you use for running and explosiveness as well. And then you get more confidence. And then if you want to go, you do not have to. I think everyone should be able to. If you cannot go and run at least do like 80% sprints, you probably should not. It is probably best that you don't go and run. It's like saying, if you have a blown out tire in a car and I put the spare on there, this is your reminder to go blow up your spare tire because it's probably flat. I put it on, they say, don't drive over 45 miles an hour. Why? Well, because it's not rated for that. So you could say, well, that's stupid. I'm going to go do this one. I should be able to do this. It's like, no. Let's back up and say, you would want to go and get real tires that are rated for that speed. So if you don't go, let's say you don't go sprint because you don't feel like your body can maintain that and do that safely, then let's say, all right, what do I need to do to address this and to change out the tires, so to speak, to build up that trust? And these are things you could do. And then once you do that, then you start to get more confident. I think doing some barefoot strides really give you good feedback. So you're going to run correctly. You're going to not overstride. Most injuries happen. People overstride. They reach too far out because they're heel striking. Mm-hmm. Instead of shortening that stride, which happens naturally when you're barefoot, and you just do what are build-up strides. You slowly build up, maybe get to 60%, and you slowly build back down. You walk back for rest. You walk backwards if you want. Then you do it, you go to 70%. And you just stay well within this area. And then as you get more and more confident, you can do that stuff. And this is the expression of that. And as we get older, I don't need my 70-year-old mother to 64-year-old mother, sorry, mom, to go and sprint max effort. But I do want her to be able to have some of that capacity, even if it's just getting up to 60%. It's like we all have the capacity to run. Everyone does. The question is whether or not we have the tissue strength and resiliency to be able to maintain that for the distance we want to do. So that's where you build up. And as I build, as I go from being able to not run at all to being able to just barely, you know, stride and do some jogging, running, then to being able to go 60%, 70%, what I'm doing is I'm raising up the ceiling. So I raise up the ceiling for how much force my body can maintain at the top, meaning how much, you know, the weight, the bridge can hold at any one time. And as I pair that with strength work, with walking, and with, let's say, jogging that's intentional. So think of like jump roping or like very slow, easy. Watch like Eliud Kipchoge when he does his longer distance stuff. It's very slow. Well, one of the things is like that develops the resiliency and the volume. So I raise the ceiling and then I develop the volume. It's I build the base of the pyramid, then I raise the height. I build the base, build the height. Is Louis Simmons' pyramid's only as tall as his base? So that's the big picture. And then within that, that develops. So think about this. From an ancestral, so to use that broad word, but from a perspective of how we would have trained, we would have, upper body would have been developed by carrying, by pushing, by pulling, by picking things up, by fighting, wrestling. Lower body would have been developed by running and jumping. The Greeks would have done a lot of jumping, like broad jump into a sand pit. If you have a pit, you go jump and you land, something that takes that soft balance of the force away. Running would have been, I sprint to build strength and explosiveness. You want to see strong pound for pound guys. Sprinters are what you want. The amount of force they can put in their pound relative to their body weight is insane. And then you think, okay, that's part of the equation, but what about the volume? I'm bouncing back and forth. I'm developing this. Think about this. Walking, the form of walking where you land, you slightly invert your foot, you walk, you roll up through the fourth and fifth metatarsal, cross the big toe and push off the big toe, is the same thing as sprinting or as running, minus the heel part. You just land and you pronate across. But the same function and motion you have with this stuff develops a tissue resiliency. So after hundreds, so you go and you 10,000 steps. That's 5,000 steps each foot that you're developing that, right? Think about that. If you're intentional, and this is the thing, is you go and wear like a big, none of these are the Hokas. If you're wearing shoes that let you kind of flat the ground every single time, down every single time, and you're not getting the feedback, you're not getting those feet stronger, then you can go walk 20,000 steps and actually be loading your body in a way that's not helpful, but it's still volume and you're not developing the resiliency.
So you can make your feet stronger with just like some minimalist shoes, you think?
Think about this from a perspective. Your feet, I want to make this as simple, as easy of an onboard for anyone listening as possible. It is not go do my process. It is not, I do have a process if you're in pain, just so you know. But it is not like you need to do my technique. You need to do my philosophy. It's like your feet need a bare minimum. There's five steps we can go over to just like barely get your feet moving. And once you get that started and you move with feedback, it is a snowballing thing. It's so accessible. Everything, there is like, think about this. Kids are born with no arches. And somehow, over the first 2 to 3 years of their life, they make arches. No one knows how to, like, no woman knows how to make a baby. They just happen. No kid knows how to make an arch. They just
build. You ever see a baby getting pushed around the stroller? Their little toes are always going,
They're thinking, they're feeling. So if a kid can do it, it's doing itself. It's literally, it's like a battery of a car. The more you drive it, the more it gets charged. So if a kid can engage and do this, you can do it too. So the question is, if your feet are hurting in minimalist shoes, if they're not strong, if they're, let's say they're weak and you're in pain, then something isn't getting that snowballing process. But once you get the beginning foot introduction, it's a snowballing thing that continues to build up momentum and they get stronger and stronger by doing it. This is not something you're like, you need to spend 40 minutes every day doing active release therapy for your feet and then do all my specific motions before you even think about putting on a shoe and before you even think about squatting. It's like, that's overwhelming.
So just changing into a shoe like this guy here might help?
That's one of the best things you could do. But please be mind, there's three mistakes people make, one of which is they just changed the shoe. Mm-hmm. So that's like, I just changed the shoe. My foot has been in a shoe like this, where you see there's like a very narrow toe box. Nike just doesn't like the fact that people have pinky toes. But it's like that, or thick socks and smash them together. This has inhibited you. It's like if you've been in a bad relationship your whole life or a bad job, you've never thought about yourself as an individual, guess what? You're not going to just be able to be in a good relationship. It's like you got to learn that pattern.
Let me add this in real quick. It's funny. I like those shoes, like the Nikes. I like wearing them just like if I don't wear them a lot of the time, but when I'm podcasting or something and I want a shoe that looks good, I like wearing those. The problem is, though, it's funny. When I walk in those, I feel the ground. When I walk in these, I feel like I walk differently. Mm-hmm. I walk stiffer. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is there are people that walk around with that 100% of their day, and I would never put my 3 feet through that after understanding what my feet should be feeling.
So, and that's part of it, which is how do you get this message? Because one of the things I hear is that it's very easy for foot nerds to get out and say, your feet are being trapped and destroyed by the shoes you wear. Stop wearing shoes. It's like, yeah, but you know, I like to look good when I go on a date, and some people like to wear Jordans. So this is, your feet are strong and resilient. It's just no different than, the way I want you to think about it is with the right strength and the right foundation, your feet are very strong. And that means they can be in a shoe like that for a few hours and be totally fine. Uh-huh. But just like if you're going on an airplane, and I was sitting for hours yesterday, if you're just sitting down for hours at a time, we kind of get that, okay, maybe I should do some movement and open that up and undo that. So if you are wearing those shoes, that's totally fine. If you have to wear shoes, I mean, there's things you can do, right? So like even these Air Jordans, I don't hate them all. Like they're obviously a narrow toe box, but relatively they're kind of flat. Okay, I don't love these. But the point is, like if you can have a shoe with a wider toe box, there are dress shoes that look, you can make, if you have to be in shoes all the time, like if you're, and it's totally fine, wear shoes. I'm not out here. I'm the barefoot
trainer. A lot of times dress shoe has a pretty wide toe box.
Yeah. Yes. And you can get dress shoes that look like they have a heel, but they're actually down. They're flatter. Mm-hmm. Those are great options. And Anya's reviews is like the best for like the amount of like research she's done for men and women, different types of shoes and European shoes and stuff. The point is that like if you have to be in a shoe all the time, because there are a lot of guys in the military, there are people that work construction, have steel toe boots, it's tough, right? So there are choices you can make to have better options. So flatter, more flexible, wider in the toe box. What's the other one? Thinner sole. Like, you know, of those, like being flat is the most important. Being flexible is the second, or wide in the toe box is the most important. Flat, so same heel to toe, is the next most. And then you get like a, what's it,
wide? Toe box?
There's toe box, it's flat, it's wide in the toe box, it's
the height?
Yeah, there's the thinness, there's one more. It's just gonna say flat, flexible, wide in the toe box.
Flat, flexible, wide.
I said it all.
Oh, yeah, thin sole, yeah.
Yep, that's the least important. So if you can get it flat, if you get it flexible, and if you can widen the toe box, you're good. Mm-hmm. And the next part, the thinness in the sole, is about comfort. So if you're not ready for that, that's totally fine. But the thinness allows you like not sprain your ankle when you're walking on an uneven surface, and it gets you, lets you feel the ground. But remember, it's not about being perfect. This is not about the right shoe. It's just understanding that your feet are strong and capable, and if you do the work underneath them, and then, hey, when you have to go on a date, well, you don't have to. If you want to go on a date, and you want to, you know, like when I wear my 6-inch stiletto pumps and I go on a date and look cute, it makes my butt look really good. When I do that, it's like, oh, okay, let me just do a little bit of work afterwards. But one of the things I love is that I go through this running program and I get clients that always give me feedback. And I got a 20-day process, which you do this and your feet continue to go. And one of the ladies that was doing it said, I had to go out and wear dress shoes, like 6-inch heels, some heels. And she goes, normally my feet ache for days after doing that. But like I woke up today and it felt great. I was like, that's what I want. Your feet should be able to go and do whatever and bounce back. You should be able to go run, play basketball, lift, and feel great the next day.
You know, it's funny. When it comes to like heels, whenever like with my exes, whenever I'd see them in heels, I'd be like, do you like wearing that? It just looks really painful. And the reason why is because when I wore cleats, when I played college soccer, mm-hmm. I am thankful this happened to me because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. But since I wore cleats all growing up, my feet, let's say this is my pinky toe, my pinky toe came in and it would compact my feet, and they had to shave off the bunionette bone from my pinky toe and stick a screw in. And that's the thing that like I was in crutches for 7 months. I went back to try and run on the field and I couldn't, so I got cut. And that's what stopped my soccer career. But I'm thankful that happened. But either way, I know the problems that narrow shoes can have because I have a wide foot.
Yeah. And most people, even people have narrow feet, they're still toes, no foot. So there's two things. People look at, like you saw the Alpha Fly where there's the raised toe on the front and the back. They say that pretenses your toe for the next stride and allows you to roll into it. But it actually is just an aesthetic thing. Nike's narrow toe box that comes together like an elf is just an aesthetic thing. The only reason there's a raised heel is just an aesthetic thing to make you look taller. So these three things that are so common, like the curve under the shoe, the narrow toe box, the raised heel, are literally only for aesthetics, which is fine. Mm-hmm. If you want a shoe that looks good, that's absolutely fine. But the important thing is to understand that these things have an impact on your function and your health. And over time, that degrades the quality of your foot and you literally lose the capacity to move. And then when that can't work, all of the muscles in your calf, your shin, your lower leg, your knee, your hip that are engaged by those feet aren't working. And then that creates long-term functionality that's lost at those up your body. And then you get weaker.
I don't know who it was that came onto the podcast and said it, but there's somebody we were talking to recently that said that top level professional athletes are just the highest level and the best compensators for issues. Because yes. As we're talking about all of this, I think about all the NBA players that have been running and playing in basketball shoes all their life. And typical basketball shoes are pretty narrow. And these guys are jumping, sprinting, going side to side, playing defense, getting low. You see, I'm not going to say this is what happened to him, but Kevin Durant, who had that Achilles injury that fucked him for a year, and he's back on the court. But these players are doing these amazing athletic movements. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't give a fuck about the shoe they're wearing. Even Jordan, Jordans.
They sell them.
They sell them, yeah.
Here's a good example of this, because what you want to think about is people go, well, why do they wear that? First off, most of the shoes that these athletes wear are bespoke models made. They're specifically made and built around the foot.
Ooh, okay.
They're not like the version is Eliud Kipchoge is running that marathon. I'm probably saying his name wrong.
So Eliud Kipchoge is how some people say it, but yeah.
Eliud Kipchoge, now I know.
Eliud Kipchoge.
Right, well, I'm going to just now, every time I say...
Eliud Kipchoge?
Put his voice over me, but the real salty, deep, salty voice. So when he's running, he's actually running that marathon in a bespoke version of the Nike Alpha Flight. That's not for sale. These athletes are making, generally speaking, bespoke version of this stuff, and then they go and pump it out. And the other thing I'd think is that these shoes are made, if you were like me, where my shoe size is the same as my age for a while, the 12, 13, they made that shoe. I had the LeBron, the first one and two LeBrons. I loved basketball shoes when I was younger, and I also was slow as fuck because I couldn't pick my feet up. That shoe, this Air Jordan, is made for 300 or 250 to 300 pound basketball player and me, who happened to buy it because my parents wanted to buy it for Christmas. So, mm-hmm. Think about that is like that shoe that you're wearing, they're made to 200,000 pairs because they got to ship this all out and send it to you. That's not made for you. Mm-mm. It's like, that's one thing to keep in mind is that when you do see this, they're not necessarily, it's not what you see. And they were trying to get a shoe that looks different, that looks cool so that you'll buy it. It's a business thing as well. So it's not about functionality. And it's, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Power Project family, how's it going? You guys probably have watched a lot of Mark's lifting videos and some of my lifting videos. And you've probably noticed that our shorts never go past our knees.
Nope.
There's a reason for that. Y'all got to show those quads off, baby. And the shorts that we're always wearing are from a company called Vuori. That's spelled V-U-O-R-I. But Vuori has amazing clothes for the gym that we wear, but also outside the gym. So you can wear them to dinner parties, dates, gatherings, all that good stuff. But all their clothes fit well, fit amazing. This is a shirt from Vuori, by the way. Look at that shoulder. It's a two. just look at this. Look at the. It fits so well. For people in fitness. And even if you're not, just check them out. Andrew, how did they get it?
Yeah, clothes that look good inside and outside of the gym and work just as well inside and outside of the gym. Head over to Vuori.com/Power Project. That's Vuori.com/Power Project to receive 20% off your first order. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
So yeah, there's a lot of controversy over that. When you look up racing times and you dig into some of this shoe stuff, people are like, it's not the exact same shoe that's on the market. It doesn't do, for this guy what it's doing for the average person.
So just to make sure that I don't, because it's easy for me, if you haven't figured out, I can talk a lot. Just to make sure I'm not like, are there any I'm trying to do rapid fire, common objections, things that you would think, what would someone think about this? I'll try to be as quick as possible because I want this to be actionable. What do people walk away and take this? Because there's a lot of things.
How can someone get their arch back?
So the first thing you want to think about, there's five steps. I'm going to walk through this. Five steps to restore your feet and ankles. And this is if your feet are quote unquote healthy, meaning you're not actively in pain. If you're actively in pain, it's still the step, but we may need to put a step one sub-article A, sub-article B. So that's a process. If you have pain issues, it may just take a little bit longer, but it's still the same thing. Step one, differentiate the toes. So think about your hand. Your hand and your feet generally came from the same thing. They've evolved. If I couldn't move my hand, and I said, my wrist hurts. Well, the first thing is let me peel these things apart, right? So what you want to do is something called a hand-foot glove. You literally take your fingers, you sit down, and you put your fingers in through your toes. I guess no one can see that, but you literally go and you work your fingers in through your toes, and you just sit there. Start with a minute as you're watching TV or whatever you're doing. You sit there and you just work. Oh, look at that. So you can do circles. You can go lateral. You can start to move, but feel these things. You're trying to differentiate your toes and get movement to that. Exactly, right? So think about this. Your
Chris Duffin used to do this a lot.
He actually did it. About this.
Yeah, he actually did it to me when I went up to his place.
You haven't let me in between. Oh, that's the next level. We're going to go get to the next level of relationship next.
It helped a lot with my squat. It took pain away from my knee.
As you guys are listening, you should do this. It feels amazing.
Unless you're driving, in which case, do it with one hand on the wheel. So what you think about is there are bones in the meat of the foot, the metatarsals, that should be pliable. And so we're starting to get motion to them. Toe spreaders can be good for this, but toe spreaders by themselves are not sufficient because they are just a passive way of moving and loading. If you were just using toe spreaders, what you end up doing is you just shove it open. Just like an arch and orthotic, it just says, hey, lift your foot up. But what you want to do is bring awareness to feel your toes and differentiate those. So first step is differentiate the toes. Start with that 60 seconds or 2 minutes a day each side. Just start to do that. It'll feel really painful at first. Your fingers are going to hurt. And yes, it's going to feel like that until it starts to open up. Two or three times, you're going to feel better. Step two, restore that big toe. If you think about your hand to your thumb, your big toe is to your foot, which your thumb is to your hand. So if I couldn't move, there's a camera. If your thumb was attached to the side of your hand and you couldn't move it, how much different would your hand function? That's what happens with that big toe. So we want to create that gap that between that big toe and the rest of the toes, a little bit more of that splay. So this is what I call the big toe thumbs up. You take down, so let's take your left foot, you take your right hand and you fold the little toes down. And then you take your left hand and you pull the big toe apart. And you just use that big toe like a joystick. And you just pull it left, you pull it across, you lift and you create your adduction and you pull. There you go. And then you lift and you start to work there. And start to feel that. And then as you can let go of your left hand and let those hold those toes down, your goal is to be able to do a big toe thumbs up. So you flex your toe and you lift up and you extend those toes. So you're literally doing a thumbs up with your foot.
When people feel crampiness, what's that?
When your feet cramp, that is muscle confusion. And by muscle confusion, what I mean is that your brain does not know how to distinguish between all the muscles that are working and is therefore firing them all. And it just it seizes up, it spazzes. There's like Charlie horses and there's cramps. And cramps are a great opportunity for your body to learn and reorient how it feels. So when you have cramps, don't come after me with technicalities of the exact words for this stuff. When you have cramps, understand that my body is confused about what to do. Therefore, I'm going to sit with that cramp, sit with it, and then squeeze and engage the muscles. And you're saying, hey, this is, it's like when you have a kid, I don't have a kid, so I'm just going to speak for example, and you're trying to get them to load the dishwasher. And it's so painful because I just don't get that the knife shouldn't stick up. And it's like, whatever it is, it's like, you have to sit with them and just let them make that mistake. So sit with it. It will go away. So that's muscle cramps. And when you have cramps, it's a great thing because that means your body's, oh, something's working. Let me sit and learn from this. Okay. Step one, differentiate the toes. Step two, restore the big toe. Step three, we want to restore the arch and the muscles underneath the foot. So now, what I want you to think about is your pinky, so the balls of your feet, if you feel those, the ball that is connected to the big toe is called your first metatarsal phalange joint. Doesn't matter as much, but that's what it is. So you feel that. The ball on the outside of the foot is your fourth and fifth. So that's, you're on the fourth and fifth. Andrew, will you pull up, Jamie, will you pull up this?
I'm on your Instagram, but do you have anything?
Just do anatomy of foot, like bone, you know, just foot anatomy.
This is Jamie, but better. His name is Zaddy Zaragoza.
There you go. Perfect. So the fourth and fifth metatarsal and the big toe. So we want to restore this rotation. So there are three arches, one on the inside of the foot called the medial longitudinal, one on the outside of the foot called the lateral longitudinal, and then one called the transverse that goes across. We want to restore the motion there. So you will literally, so you see the pinky toes, that little, the bottom of the fourth and fifth metatarsal. So where the long bone goes right up to the toes, right in there, that's your metatarsal. So you shift your weight up to that. You pronate, so you shift your weight up on that on your calves. You lift the big toe off the ground. So you're literally just in that position. And you can hold on to something to help balance. Then you shift all the way
across. A little
across.
More, Seema, with like a little, bit harder. Off the ground? Yeah, like that. Yeah, that's a
you
good.
You shift up so your foot is inverted. So the bottom is lifting up, your big toe is off the ground. Then you pronate across. You might want to be your feet a little hips wider. You shift across to your big toe, that first metatarsal, and then your heels are off. So your pinky toe is off the ground. Then you lower down your heels. You raise back up on that first metatarsal, that big toe, and then you pronate all the way across, and then you lower back down. So you're up on the pinky toe, big toe's off the ground, shift across, the big toe is on the ground, the pinky toes are off, and you lower back down.
It feels amazing.
There's all kinds of variations we could do to develop that, but that is essentially how we restore the motion around the bottom of the leg. So your fibularis peroneal muscles on the outside, posterior tibialis muscles on the inside, and you start to restore the arch underneath your foot.
And if you guys are just listening, we are showing this stuff on YouTube currently, so come over.
Literally right now. I don't know if it'll be when you're listening, but
and
right now
we'll be up on our YouTube channel too.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll have a video on this.
Mm-hmm. Step four is we want to restore the pronation on the top of the foot. So this is the extensor muscle. So everyone talks about tibialis now; it's all the rage. But there are multiple things that are extensor digitoris minimi, so that lift the toes up. We have an extensor for the big toe. We have a tibialis anterior, which lifts the whole foot up. We also have the tibialis posterior. So what we want to do is you would sit against the wall, and you can do this. You sit against the wall, put your hips against the wall, and do a tib raise, so where you lay and pull your toes up. But now you're just going to rotate. So you turn and put the outside bone of your foot, the fourth and fifth metatarsal, touch the ground, lift it back up, and then rotate. So it's like if you're leaning against the wall, you lift your foot up, and I put a lacrosse ball under the balls of your feet. And now I say, hey, touch the outside and the inside of your foot down, but don't touch the ball. You make an arc over the ball back and forth. Now you'd start, you do this with one foot, just do 25 to 50 reps, and you can even make partial ranges of motion. But what we're now restoring is the pronation to the ankle, and I'm getting that restored with the muscles that when I make contact, these muscles absorb force. So I'm pronating left and right. I'm lifting and I'm rotating back and forth, back and forth. That's step four, because we want to get the bottom of the foot and then the top of the foot, the muscles that extend. And then step five is to integrate it all together. The best thing you could do is sled. So slow, sensual, feeling, love making, just melting into the ground,
make
sled
love
pushes.
To the ground, baby.
Exactly. And just imagine that voice in your head. You're walking, you're feeling, because we want to – none of this matters if I can't integrate and put my feet into the ground and feel that. So that's when you can go for a walk, so you can walk backwards, but a sled is very slow. You have to really push into the ground. That would be step five, is put it all together. Mm. Now, if you have pain, if you have dysfunction, or the pieces, that's what I've got as my ready-to-run program that spreads it apart into a 28-day process because it's doing that. But from a healthy perspective, that right there restores your feet. And then when you restore your feet, it's a snowballing thing as long as your shoes don't impact your performance. In which case, if you are, like, let's say, a team sport player, you're lifting, doing some barefoot jogging before and after, doing some of these foot exercises to go and get that, so the hand-foot glove and some of these things before and after, that'll restore the capacity. And when you do that, that gets your feet back on your brain's map. And then you'll be amazed at how much more you lift up and you feel connected and you're able to operate and orient that way. Does that make sense?
Makes absolute sense.
Yeah, that's great.
I was going to say, guys, when he, I don't, did you talk about gripping the ground and creating an artificial arch?
It's not an artificial arch.
Or not artificial, but creating.
One of the things, so there's a great exercise called an arch builder. So if think about this, if I were to grab something and make a fist, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially, when you make a fist, it's kind of what you're doing with the arch. But the difference in making a fist, so if I lift my foot up and I squeeze the toes, that's called, we call them foot crunches, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the difference of this making a fist and this where I'm grabbing something, so if I pick up a water bottle, I'm connecting, I can make a fist and do this all day. But if I connect that to a surface and I pick something up, that connects it to the rest of my body, my shoulders, my core, except everything else. Now, what you can do is when you stand, take your toes, so you put three points of contact, heel, pinky toe, big toe. And then I take the toes and I grab the ground. And I literally, you know, it helps if you're on a carpet, if you're on a t-shirt, or like a balled up t-shirt, or if you're on turf or something that kind of gives you things to grab. Just sit there and then you make this, you shorten, you lift the foot up. So you literally just squeezing and grabbing the ground, and it's called arch builders. You're picking up just over and over and over and over again and doing sets of 25 and 50. Those will turn it on. So before you lift, if you can find something, squeeze and grab and engage. You can even do this in your shoe, but that's what you feel, the glutes engage. You start to turn that on, and that's when you start to really feel engaged, and that's like you feel like, fuck yeah, I'm grounded. I want to explode. I want to do all this shit.
Your knees are going outwards, but I wanted you to say that because we've mentioned this many times on different episodes of the podcast, rooting your foot into the ground or grabbing the ground. Mm-hmm. When a lot of people think about squatting and knees out, et cetera, what they'll do is they'll purposefully push their knees out. Mm. But if you're in the right squatting position and you do what you just spoke about there, not only will you get all the activation through the legs, the knees will naturally start to point outwards. And if you squat maintaining that and go to depth and maintain that grip coming up, you will not have valgus knee, which is the error of the knees coming inwards.
So this is an important thing. When you look at this, so we'll tie a lot of these pieces together because there's different training methods that are popular. You know, you look at like the old school CrossFit, knees out, and Kelly Starrett, I remember he's talking about that. Like,
Kelly talks about rooting the foot though. No, Kelly didn't talk about knees out.
I'm saying this is my poor interpretation.
Gotcha.
My poor interpretation when I was younger is like, oh, knees out, I just shift my knees out. If your big toes are lifting off the ground, you're just adducting or you're abducting, abducting. So abduction and adduction when the knees go valgus and varus is very different. And what I realized after listening to Kelly more, and sort of really understand this, is it's screwing your feet in the ground.
Yes.
And that's where you have to grab and you twist, and that creates torsion, which is torque, this angular force around something. You're rotating, you're doing this. Now, this is something to go to where they talk about this high ankle. What does that mean? You're grabbing the ground and lifting up. But the point is, if you just say high ankle, but you don't say root with that big toe spread and grab and lift up, you lose context, and you can easily get through the knees out adduction or abduction. And then you look at like the ATG, where they're really engaging and pushing off the ground for the squats, the ATG split squat. You're filling in the ground. You're doing this stuff. That's where you have to engage with the ground. So when you feel this stuff, it all connects. So the ATG, we're talking the sled and really pushing. You have to feel and you push and you drive through. It's this rotational force. Mm-hmm. That starts when you root with the big toe. So that big toe lifts, and when you do that, you feel support underneath. So you literally, if I lift, so I'm not just lifting the bottom of the foot up with the pinky toes. I'm grabbing and lifting up, and there's a slight rotational force, and that creates a little bit of tension. So if you braid a hair, braids are stronger than just straight fabric or straight line. So I'm rotating, I'm lifting up. That creates a strong force where I'm underneath myself, and that's the root of it all. So it starts with the feet. But remember, if you can't, this is why no amount of training will do. It doesn't matter how beautiful floors 2 through 49 are if the foundation is fucked. So if you can't move that big toe, none of this matters. And if you do the fancy boards, if you wear the fancy shoes, if you get the orthotics in, do the toe spreaders, but if you cannot engage that big toe, nothing else matters. So you start there. And when you can do that and you feel that, you are just, your lifting, your strength, your squat, everything gets in better. And it's like, think about it, you don't have to go and do all this stuff intentionally. When you engage the right few cues, like your toe is the key to your body, when you do that, it becomes a snowballing thing that then builds and grows and grows and grows. And all of a sudden, I am moving. I am more explosive. I'm naturally a little bit more pigeon-toed when I'm sprinting, and I'm pushing off that big toe. Like, all these things come together, and then people go, oh, you look athletic. I'm like, that's a fucking change, because you should have seen me 10 years ago. And that's mm-hmm. the beauty of it all. It's like, it really, what does it all mean? It means you have your body back. You can go sprint, and then, you know, yeah.
What about sandals and flip-flops and shit like that?
All right. I can do a short answer on this. When you walk, I can't. when you walk naturally, your toes splay. You literally are splaying. You're grabbing the ground. You're feeling. When you wear shoes that have, and that happens naturally when you have a shoe with a heel strap. When you have shoes that don't have a heel strap, your toes have to clench down and keep that from flying off your foot.
That's how I feel when I wear flip-flops. Yeah.
So, well, I do not recommend people wear open-heeled shoes. You can do it, but understand it affects your gait. And so
open-toed shoes?
Open-heeled.
Open-heeled.
Meaning the toes can be open, but if there's – so you can have a sandal that goes through and wraps around the back of the heel.
Yeah,
I see.
That's like the quintessential. But if something doesn't hold onto your heel, your foot has to hold onto it. Instead of splaying and moving every time you're squeezing down, and that can create a shortened – you're no longer – it's kind of like if all I do is grip and grip and grip and push and bench press and jack off. It's like I'm not actually getting mm-hmm. the extension, and that gets a shortened, tightened thing on the elbow, and it creates elbow tendonitis. Mm-hmm. No different than Achilles tendonitis that happens in plantar fasciitis. It happens when I don't spread the toes. So just think that those impact your gait. And I know they're cool, but guess what? Crocs are also cool for some people, and they have little – so flip those Crocs around and put the thing on the back if you're going to wear that. But
hey, if you also if you want to look ugly, you do what he says, but that's also more functional.
I just wear barefoot. I've got the Jesus sandals that wrap around the heels. I've given up all odds of ever finding a girlfriend, so it's just like – so I put up a
post. Boy, don't say that. Don't put that in universe. You know that's not true.
I know. It's tongue-in-cheek.
I know.
So I put up a post, and I was like, I three pairs of shoes. I got these old Merrells that have big holes in the side because I ripped them out. My feet finally fit them. I got my Vibrams, and I got these like the Jesus sandals. And I put up a review, and I was like, giving up. I basically said that. And the owner of the shoe company said, they're not that bad looking. And I was like, yeah, okay. But so this is the point. It's like if you want to wear those like your Yeezys that you want to spend $400 on, it's like, just give me the $400 and I'll save you some foot pain. It's just simply by not doing that.
Yeah.
What's the program again? Give me your shoes. Okay, that's good. But just remember the shoes you wear, like if you're going to practice and you're wearing socks and doing this stuff, basically you're inhibiting all of that stuff. So think of it. It's like if you're a quarterback, you're going to go work on throwing, and it's like I show up to practice, I'm my hands in an oven mitt, and it's like slinging an oven mitt, and then I'm like, yep, all right, I'm ready to go. It's like, no. You need to engage and move that because it's not just going to go in full speed.
Mm-hmm.
Other short rapid fire questions that I can't answer.
We got time, man. This is a long podcast.
I will literally sit for hours, but I think actually, you know what? People can stop and go. So literally, we can talk like transitioning shoes, you name it.
How do you train personally? Because I see you doing a lot of like you're running barefoot and stuff, but you're not just running. Like you're doing like a lot of drills. You're mm-hmm. doing like almost stuff that you would sometimes see like a football player do or basketball player do.
So I would look at the way I move. I like to play sports. That's my favorite thing. So beach volleyball, basketball, tennis, running. So for me, like going out and doing 1 or 2 days a week of track workout, so to speak, of just like I'm going to sprint as fast as I can. I'm going to do 200, 400. That's fun to me. I enjoy that. But that's something like those are very high ceiling things. Like you don't, Go run 4x400 as fast as you can and take as long as rest you need. Like, that's one of the hardest workouts you can do. It is, like, you will be dead.
What do you wear if you do that? Like, if you run on a track, what do you personally wear?
I wear silkies.
Silkies?
They're very short. You can pull them up. They're very short pants.
I know. Yeah, I know you have short shorts. I meant on your feet.
I wear silkies. I don't wear anything else.
And you're barefoot. Okay.
So, you know what's funny? I knew I made it. I went out and it was just a workout. Because I have the luxury of, I live near a college campus that has a very big turf field. So, it's got like a track on the turf field. But even, So, you see this. Those are those shorts. I love the aesthetic of that.
So you,
that
do you,
first one looked really good.
You don't run on a track; you run on a field.
I do. So the problem, it's. I'll go home and run on a track, and I'll still run barefoot. I'm actually faster barefoot than I am with that, just because my feet can engage. That being said, I prefer to find a field and turf to go do that stuff. I just happen to have the luxury of being near this. It has a massive track, so I'll go and do that because why not? But if I go, I'll still run on a track and I'll still go and do this stuff because just kind of prove and show that your body can go and do these things. On occasion, like if I have to do we can talk about cleats in a second because it's not like I'm dogmatic about what you have to wear.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go run, so I went out and I was doing like a 400 meter workout at a few, and there's the women's rugby team was warming up, and one of them goes, "Hey, look, it's the barefoot, or it's the TikTok sprinter." I was like, "I have fucking made it. I have made it." So you start to see like that's a fun thing. This is just going through that stuff. Those are silkies, by the way.
Oh, the shorts?
Yeah, they're like made like special ops military. They're so comfortable.
I like those.
Oh my gosh, they're so comfortable.
I like short shorts. I can't wait to,
Oh yeah, I'll hook you up with
Viori. Viori, make some short shorts like that, please.
They're called silkies, and their Sophies make them with a nice thick band, and then they wrap everything together. Oh, it's beautiful.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the point. But if I'm going to go, let's say if I'm going to run on like, you know, let's say if I'm not wearing this, I'd wear my Vibram, so like let my toes spread out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just engage in that, like those five finger toes.
Yeah,
but that's, you can still go, there's, now let's talk about cleats for example. There are times where you would go, I do all my training and stuff, it's either barefoot or in those Vibrams. There are times, let's talk about cleats and then go back to the way I train. When you have to do very short, so think about like if I'm doing very short, quick turns, that's where cleats, because they give you traction. There's a reason these things are there. So I'm never like, I don't expect you to go into a barefoot competition and run because it protects your feet and gives lousy grip.
Change of direction. It's huge.
If I step and I want to turn and my foot slides, that puts me at risk for injury, right? Because I can't grip. So if I'm doing short agility work and explosive stuff to try and go left and right, then yeah, wear those. But, you know, the hard part is finding shoes that don't smash your feet. So the guys at Code Footwear are working on a prototype with like a wider toe box and some toe spacers in there that I think is phenomenal. I'm really excited for them to get that out.
Is it Code?
CODE_FTWR. Like, it's solving cleats for athletes is one of the most lucrative problems, shoes you could have. Like, if they're the next, you think about this, you're already paying $300 for shoes that are hurting your feet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what does it look like to have something that's wide enough? Because it's not just a matter of preventing injury. It's also when I can't move my toes, I can't run as fast. So you are not performing as well as you can, and you're worse risk for injury. Blows my mind. And yet everyone's like, well, you know, Adidas has the market. They've got, people think the market's cornered. They don't realize that you need two or three guys that are just desperate around the outside that have been fucked up by injury for years, and they're willing to try something, and then they go in to do this, and all of a sudden their feet work, because it's not like you're not good. It's like your body. How many LeBron James and Michael Jordans are out there that just got fucked up and injured? Like,
hey,
and
that's real.
That's the reality. And so like so much of that comes from your feet. And if we don't develop the strength and capacity around that, we end up underperforming. So that's one thing. So I'll still wear them. My favorite cleats, I like lacrosse cleats because they tend to be, for whatever reason, they're more flexible. They bend. The New Balance specifically, I like the Burn and the Freeze, but they'll rotate and twist left and right and actually fold up pretty much out the box. Some of these kids will show up with like Adidas football cleats that it's like they're clear plastic, like they're gold plastic on the bottom. Like, I couldn't bend that thing with my life dependent on. I'm like, there's a reason your knee just got blown up. Mm-hmm. So that's all there. But the point is, like, I like to orient my training around playing in sports. So I'll play volleyball, whatever it is, and trying to do that stuff. But I do 2 or 4 days of lifting, 1 day of sled active conditioning, and then I layer some sports on top of that. But 1 day is like really get out and get after it with sprinting, which I think we'll get to do tomorrow. It should be fun.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of ATG style training, I guess, which is really just like loading through long ranges of motion. So split squat, step ups. I'll still do a little bit of like all of the things. Cause I think there's beauty in all of it, right? Powerlifting is really loading that spinal column and getting under some weight that gets the brain potentiated. You look at ATG split squat, which is really good for creating movement across a range of motion to start to work on some of these asymmetries and building from the ground up and engaging this stuff. Bodybuilding to get blood flow and get everything engaged there. Olympic lifting for this explosive stuff. It's like there's all beauty and magic in all those pieces. And it's like, what does that look like wrapped together? I think I do this. It's called, I don't know if I made up, it's probably not me, but it just seems true, like a tri-set thing. So I do a main mover, and an agonist, and antagonist. So a main mover and then mm-hmm. the opposite. So a push yeah. and then a pull and then a stabilizer. So 1, 2, 3. So like a bench press, a dumbbell row, and then like I don't know, a shoulder blade stabilizer or mm-hmm. a squat and then like, you know, like a hinge, a squat movement, and then a L-sit hold for the hip flexor. Just stuff like that, because it's like, at the end of the day, training is supposed to train you for something, right? Yeah. It's like, if my sport is to be athletic, so to speak, then yeah, I want to do this, but I'm not necessarily chasing anything. So, you know, with shoulders, I try to go really, really high volume, lower intensity, lower weight, just to get a lot of blood flow there. Hips and feet are a lot of, you know, sometimes trap bar deadlifts, RDLs, split squats, front squats, a lot of VMO elevated squats, stuff like that. So, you know, try to get the best of all the worlds in there.
Cool. I think we covered a lot. Well, yeah. How about you guys?
Man, there's something we're going to attack via video at some point, but I want everyone to know this episode, like I've been talking to you, like we got to get some mm-hmm. people to come on here and talk about feet, because when I started paying attention to more of the foot stuff last year and I started strengthening my feet, I saw the difference it made. I'm like, God, if every athlete just started strength or like focusing on getting better feet, just like when Ben came here and we're like, if every athlete just got mm-hmm. better knees, they'll see a difference. This is the same thing, mm-hmm. but this is actually even easier to implement, because all it takes for you to do is potentially maybe take your shoes off, maybe take a walk, get yourself acclimated. I mean, Andrew has an amazing story with mm-hmm. how his feet used to feel on normal ground.
Yeah, no. So I was wearing normal shoes, just like you see there on the table. But then I got a pair of the Vivo barefoot shoes, but with a little bit more support than what I have currently on right now. But before that, like I couldn't even walk on my kitchen floor without like having to gingerly move around. Like it hurt.
Was it like ticklish or was it like oversensitization?
Like it just felt like I was bruised everywhere all the time. So I could, even with shoes on, I couldn't walk on those like caution bubbles when mm-hmm. you're on the sidewalks. Like I'd have to avoid them. Like mm-hmm. the place that sucked the most was Walmart, because they had like the biggest one. And I would think about that before we'd go in. It's got to be at least 4 months now that I've been wearing Vivo barefoot shoes exclusively. Mm-hmm. And I'm so much more confident. Like I wouldn't have been able to walk around in the gym today the mm-hmm. way I did without getting my feet used to wearing these shoes now. Good. Yeah.
So two thoughts on that. One of which is you can think about like going out in the sun after being inside for a long day. Like we're oversensitized, oversensitized. Like I don't know what to do with all this stuff. And the other thing, the guy who had the men's sexual health expert that was on a few days ago.
Justin Brandis.
Yep. He was talking about the two places that don't get the most blood flow, mm-hmm. penis and your feet, your toes, I should say. Well, people are like, oh, you put socks on. But it's like, oh, actually, you could just, if you're cold, you move. And so think about that. If your toes, we get this like this neuropathy, this oversensitization to surfaces we're walking because we don't have a lot of sensation to that. We don't know how to, like our body's overly sensitized to that. So then mm-hmm. you feel everything and it feels engaged. So kind of. That's part of like fixing pain. It can be if you're really sensitive stuff, if your feet are really ticklish, it's just like getting more exposure to stuff. I used to have the same thing. It was so sensitive. And now I can actually, I go out in the morning and walk on rocks every, I know this sounds silly, but like I jump and walk on rocks, like river rocks.
That's a great idea.
But now it's like going and walking outside. You feel this. It's a fun feedback. But he talks about like, okay, if your toes aren't getting blood, they're not getting movement. And then that creates a loss of function to them. So if your toes are cold, like think about that. Like going and moving and flexing and getting blood flow to them makes a big, big difference. So like, there's all these reasons to really engage with that stuff.
After you mentioned it today too, I am going to buy some toe socks.
Yeah.
Because
okay. Asks.
Yeah. Like as you mentioned that, I'm like, well, I put on my socks and I put on those Vivo shoes, but at the same time, yeah, I can feel my toes moving, but I do feel limited because mm-hmm. of the socks, yeah. even though it's just fabric. Toe socks, they look a little weird, but
they're pain in the ass. They're hard to get on.
The first time I would have to sit down and like get my toe in and wiggle it, that one, and do the toe cleavage, every single one. It gets better. But toe socks, even if you just stay in the same shoes, toe socks make a big difference because it's like it's starting to differentiate your toes and getting something in between them. Mm-hmm. And Gingy makes one that I think a lot of runners wear.
Gingy?
I-N-J-I-N-J.
I got a pair. They're nice.
Yeah, so I get the cheap ones off Amazon, supporting the corporate conglomerates, but the grabbing the ground and feeling that, like, it doesn't have to be anything crazy, but just even getting something that can work well. So think about, like, those Nike Elite socks that have a lot of, like, you know, their compression socks. Like, oh, that's a good another gimmick. It's like, I need to have socks, too. It's like, it's even smashing your feet together. So the socks you wear matter a lot. That's a great point.
And, I lost my train of thought. God damn it. Oh, so the toe spreaders. Even if you're saying like to get our fingers in there is actually works better. But what if like I don't know, I'm going to sit down and eat dinner. I'm not going to mess with my feet in front of everybody.
A confession is I've actually never used them. I've had two companies that sent them to me, so I'm going to give them a fair shot and try them because I always, A, wanted to be able to see like what can – this should be able to be done without products, right? And I want to see what I could do without that to say like, all right, this is available with no equipment, no nothing. You can go and do this stuff. But I will say that – so there's two sides of this. One is they can be helpful to start to restore that because you do have these tissues that need to start to get there. That being said, this is not an educated opinion, so I'm working towards that. But just for what I've seen, people that put them on have a loss of circulation because I think they can be a little bit – people chase the toe spread. But it's like, okay, great, your toes can spread, but if only, you know, it's like, are they functional? It's like wearing orthotic. Yeah, it lifts your arch up, but does it actually impede you being able to move? And so our toes, you know, think about this. Like, that's like if I had hand spreaders and I get my, look how cool my hand is. It's really cool. See this, guys? Hey, it's funny. You saw follow some of the feet people and they're like, hey, picture of my feet. Like how cool it spreads out. Look at this. Guess what? It does this too. It's like, but if it keeps you from doing that, like there is a use case for it. I think it's valuable. It's a step in the right direction, but I would not be personally using more than 20, 30 minutes a day. And I would use it with some intention. Like if I'm going to sit down to eat
maybe
dinner,
even only just 2 minutes. Like if your toes aren't used to being, you know, splashed out like that, and just a couple minutes might work well.
So let's say you wake up in the morning and you go brush your teeth. You put them on. People like wear them all the time, wear them to sleep in. It's like, yeah, that I think that's too much because now you're passively stretching things out and that creates other problems because you don't have the strength. If your feet look like that, it's because they are like that. It's like getting to look, it's like a push-up bra. It's like, girlfriend, you don't have to. It's just like, or the guy that I got a kid who I train and give shout out to him, but I'm not going to say his name. He walks in with these shoes, he got like an inch heel on them. And then inside I took them off and I'm like, wait, what are these? He's got heel lifts in his shoe. And I'm like, that gives him, he's like an inch half taller. And I'm like, buddy, they're going to love you for who they are. College coaches want me to be taller. It's like, no, your girlfriend's going to love you for who you are. It's like, you know, like the point is, what can your feet do, not how do they look? And this is where people get caught up with like, I got flat feet, I got low arches, they don't look pretty. It's like, that's not as important as how functional they are. So I think they're good. And as Mark, that's a great point, like 2 minutes, 10 minutes and do that. Like, and then I would get in after that and actively do some like hand foot glove and start to work on some of the other stuff. You know, the kid, like, say you're driving to the gym, you put them on in your shoe. You get to the gym, you do some stuff and then you go. Like, and the other cool thing I will say about this is, and if you guys do any lifting today, it's like once you turn the switch on, you can still put shoes on and still feel better. It's like you turn the switch on and it keeps going. It's not like I did all my – this is the problem you'd have. Like you go do foam rolling. You do all this mobility stuff back in the day. And then it's like I do that and then the second I get up, it's like I get stiff and tight again. It's like, no, your feet turn on. And then I get people feedback to go through my program and they're like, oh, my running felt light. My lifting was good. I felt more balanced. I felt more engaged. And when I do this stuff, I do some foot stuff right before I lift. It's like I feel engaged. I can stand on one foot and I have this total body turn on. So – it is one of those things where when you turn your feet on, they stay on.
It makes total sense because it's like when a lot of people talk about warming up before a lift, some people will literally just sit in foam roll. Some people will actually do squats. Some people will do pre-activation of the certain muscle groups so that they can feel it before they lift, so they can feel their triceps before they bench press. So you actually use your toes before you lift. And guys, with what we did, it's going to come out via video. You guys will feel a very big difference in your feet. And I do want to say I've used toe spreaders and I use them for a bit. I was walking around with toe spreaders inside the office, quite literally putting my fingers in between my toes, moving them around, doing those exercises. Not that toe spreaders aren't useful, but these are free things that I think are more useful to do than having my toes spread in the toe spreaders for a prolonged period of time. I think they still have their place and maybe they can be put on for a bit and it's good, but it's not as useful as putting your fingers in between, manually moving them around, doing the exercises, and then going and doing the work you need to do. That's more useful than walking around in toe spreaders.
And you know what's even better than that? Give him some lotion to Mark and let him put his fingers between your toes.
Oh, actually, yeah.
You got a partner hand glove. It's like, ooh. I think that was, you were supposed to do that, right? You were supposed to pull out the, you're supposed
it
to.
It happened already. You missed it.
I was supposed to lotion up my legs. Go ahead,
So this is actually, I know this sounds satirical, but this is actually a great idea. In so a few people in one of the second, third classes were like, you know, they couldn't get in their hand, like literally people couldn't get their hands between their gloves, but they were like, oh, if you put some lotion on, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
I was like, I didn't fucking think about that. It's like,
that's what she said. Andrew, take us on out of here, buddy.
Sure thing. I dropped my pen. Thank you, everybody, for checking out today's episode. We sincerely appreciate it. Make sure you guys like today's episode and subscribe if you guys are not subscribed already. We gave you a shit ton of things to talk about, so we want to hear your guys' comments down below in the comment section. And if you're on iTunes or Spotify, come over to the YouTube and make sure you guys drop a comment on anything anything you found interesting on today's podcast. Follow the podcast at Mark Bell's Power Project on Instagram, at MB Power Project on TikTok and Twitter. My Instagram and Twitter is at I am Andrew Z. And Seema, where you at?
Yo, this is such a good episode, man. you killed it, man. This is a lot of good info. I haven't seen my ending on Instagram and YouTube. I haven't seen my ending on TikTok and Twitter. I'm excited for all y'all. Graham, where can people find you?
So Instagram and TikTok is The Barefoot Sprinter. No, what do you call it, punctuation. YouTube is Graham Tuttle, but they'll probably link to that. And then I think that's it. Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Where can people buy some of your programming and stuff?
If you go, well, GrahamTuttle.com, but simply if you go to Instagram or TikTok, like the link in bio will take there. So if you, I truly want you to know that if you do the stuff we talked about here, watch the video and your feet are not in pain right now, that is sufficient. That is enough to go and be better. But if your feet are in pain, if you want to learn how to run, if you want to get that back, I've got a program. It's a 28-day program that will walk you through. It's a 36,000-word ebook that's broken down into fun little sections and little bite-sized morsels of information. And there are day-by-day training and you get coaching and it walks through this. And you have a program for the fix your pain in your body, get you back to that. That's something you can find. It's my website, Graham, GrahamTuttle.com, or simply just go and DM me or follow me on TikTok and Instagram, and I have all that stuff there. So, yeah.
We have some sort of code for the Vivo thingy or not yet?
Oh, well, you know what? By the time this is out, we probably should. So if you guys want to save some money on Vivos, the code is POWERPROJECT. I don't know how much it's going to save you, but it'll be active by that point.
It'll save you a fuck ton, because if you wear shoes that'll fuck your feet up, you can not go to goddamn orthopedic surgeons, physical therapists, chiros, and miss goddamn practice time. That's how much it'll fucking save you.
Guys, like, if you guys go check out the Vivo website, we've been wearing these for a while now, a long time, and there are a lot of barefoot shoes out there that are good. Don't get me wrong, they're good, but these reason why the we chose them, they actually look
Vivo
look
barefoot.
Good.
I love, all, I, I've Andrew, done a lot of stuff your in shoe. There. Oh, okay. I'm telling you, Vivo barefoots are the, for whatever reason, the style and they got it down. They are the ones that look good. So Vivo barefoots, flip it around. You got to show the outside.
I gave you the wrong shoe.
No, that's fine. That's a Primus Light. It's very minimal. It's one of their more minimal training shoes.
They got the Prio and the Primus together. This is the trail.
I got this guy here.
Yeah. That's the white version of this one. Why are we doing this, Mark? Give me that one. This is the white version of that one.
I got the black one.
This is the tan one.
But I have these in hiking shoes. Like, I have the hiking shoe versions of these, which I fucking love. Yep. They have casual shoes too that you can just wear out if you want to go to dinner or whatever. And they're making a ton of different types so that you can have good looking shoes that are minimal and wear them everywhere.
And now notice with this, what matters? And I know you want to go, but like, you'll forgive me. So why these things are good? They are flat. If you take your shoes off, guess what? Your feet and your toes are on the same level. That means your feet are flat. So these match that. They are wide in the toe box, which is unbelievable that no other shoe company can make them look athletic or attractive on the side, but they're wider in the toe box, right? Then they are flexible, meaning you can do this. And when your shoes are flexible, again, if you're in pain right now, you need to build up to this, but you can do this. Trust me, I've been on the other side. I can't even move my toe to now being able to be the barefoot sprinter. Like, the flexible matters. When this happens, that lets your feet get the little, it's thousands. So if Mark took 10, you ran, he does his 400,000 steps a day. So 400 divided by 2 is 200,000 steps each foot. 200,000 little baby steps of getting a little bit more motion, get your feet stronger. That's how you build up resiliency. Mm-hmm. So flexible matters, and they're thin, so you can feel the ground. If you're going on hiking, if you're going out on outdoor terrain, if you're stepping on things and you have big, thick-soled shoes, and you step on something that isn't perfect, you have a higher leverage that is more likely to sprain an ankle. These are flat. The amount of people I say that I get them go through the stuff, they change their shoes, they go on a hike. I didn't sprain my ankles for the first time. I didn't roll, I didn't trip. I felt more engaged with the ground. When you step with the ground, you have those 26 bones, 33 joints, hundreds of muscles, ligaments, and tendons in your body that are actually creating thousands of micro adjustments. Every time you step to the temperature, to the ground, to the texture of the ground, to the firmness, to the, like, you know, what speed you're going, you're making these tiny little adjustments. And if if you're wearing this thick-soled shoe, guess what? You get none of that feedback. And then your feet and ankles can't adjust and can't move. And then all that goes right up into your knees, your shins get stiff, your knees. It makes a fucking difference. So wear some goddamn shoes.
There you go.
I'm at Mark Smelly Bell. Strength is never weakness. Weakness is never strength. Catch you guys later.
Bye.